Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, November 27, 2017. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening over another network or you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 515-604-9386. Our participant code is 419-303. If your cell provider blocks or charges for the call, you can call our backup number, 781-838-3728. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, plural questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, pick up where we left off. We're in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 20. And we're going to read, let's see, from verse 20 to 34. So Matthew 20, verses 20 to 34. Then came to him, Jesus, the mother of Zebedee, children of her sons. Mother of Zebedee's children with her sons, worshipping him and desiring a certain thing of him. And he said unto her, What wilt thou? She saith unto him, Grant that these two my sons may sit, the one on the right hand and the other on your left hand, in thy kingdom. But Jesus answered and said, Ye know not what ye ask. Are ye able to drink of the cup that I shall drink, and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? They say unto him, We are able. And he saith unto them, Ye shall drink indeed of my cup, and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with. But to sit on my right hand or on my left is not mine to give, but it shall be given to them for whom it was prepared of my Father. And when the ten heard it, they were moved with indignation against the two brethren. But Jesus called them unto him and said, You know that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them, and they that are great exercise authority upon them. But it shall not be so among you. But whosoever will be great among you, let him be your minister. And whosoever will be chief among you, let him be your servant. Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life as a ransom for many. And as they departed from Jericho, a great multitude followed him. And behold, two blind men sitting on the wayside, when they heard that Jesus passed by, cried out, saying, Have mercy on us, O Lord, thou Son of David. And the multitude rebuked them, because they should hold their peace. But they cried out the more, saying, Have mercy on us, O Lord, thou Son of David. And Jesus stood still, and called them, and said, What will ye that I do unto you? They say unto him, Lord, that our eyes may be open. So Jesus had compassion on them, and touched their eyes, and immediately their eyes received sight, and they followed him. Matthew chapter 20, verses 20 through 34. Okay, I guess we'll start off with questions, and then we'll go into announcements, if there are any. Jan?
Okay, there are three questions tonight. The first one starts out, one of our members had a property securitization analysis report done, which is now a property securitization analysis report. Isn't that good? The NLA has filed a show cause for this case in our New York filing. The person wants to know if the property securitization analysis report and the affidavit from the Bloomberg specialist supporting the securitization analysis report can be added and filed along with the show cause. I did pay for this, and it is the absolute proof of securitization. please let me know if this is doable and or you need me to resend these reports. Thanks.
Okay, a couple of things, and we've gotten this from other people. You know, we're trying to help people out by doing, non-judicial foreclosures and, you know, trying to help them save their properties. Clearly what we file in the courts will at some point in time be dealt with. In some cases, the perpetrators might get frightened and release the property or stop assaulting the individual by stealing their property and so on, whether it be tax or mortgage companies. And but, you know, we're doing the best we can to do that. To do that costs money. You know, we have to mail we have to print out all the paperwork. We have to get the work paperwork together. We have to mail it. We have to do certified. We have to certify all the people involved. And there's a couple of processes. We haven't gone through any kind of a default process yet. But I think we're going to start that real soon. We've got quite a few of them that have defaulted, and we'll see where we can take that to. But nevertheless, there are also people who can't afford to help pay for this, and so we ask for $100 to assist us. It's a donation. It's not paid. Anybody thinks they're paying for something, they're not paying for anything. We don't charge anybody anything for anything. All of our teaching information, you know, our courses, totally free. Memberships, totally free. We survive only on donations. And of course, these $100 for each one of these non-judicial foreclosures. And we may get back into the habeas corpuses also, which again, you know, we ask for a $100 donation. We don't charge $100. We ask for that. If people can't afford it, you know, maybe they can afford $5. Maybe they can afford $50. Whatever it is that they can afford, that's the process. I want to be crystal clear with this because numerous people have responded in that way thinking they're paying for something. They're not paying for anything. And again, if you have no money, we'll do it for free. But everybody can afford something. After all, you know, it does cost money to file all this stuff. You know, you have to print it out and do the certified papers. Nevertheless, going back to the question, we're not here to argue or defend the case in any of the details of the case, shall I say. We're talking about due process and jurisdiction, and that is the key. They don't have the jurisdiction to seize this property nor to take this property, and they never take people through the due process. And so everything we're battling here really falls down to due process and, of course, lack of jurisdiction. So to put a lot of information and a lot of things into the case beyond what we've put together is not going to really do anything but really create more, start to create an argument or a discussion that they think they can argue at some point in the future, number one. But it really is just going to clutter the case. Again, we will always win on lack of due process and the inability to have the jurisdiction. Now, we will always win in a jurisdiction for a couple of reasons. Most of these courts are not even court of records. They're administrative courts. And most of the state courts run as administrative courts. And the federal courts run as administrative courts. All that being said, they don't have the power or the authority to fine or incarcerate. They can't take property. They don't have that power. They don't have that authority. Only the people, which is a jury, can do that. So nobody's had their due process. The other thing is they don't have the ability to seize, nor do they have the paperwork or the ownership or any kind of a proof of claim on you or a lien or anything. They can't get that legally anyway. It's just an impossibility because of the way the law is and the way that they try to steal these properties. So again, we get back to due process and jurisdiction. That's where our battle is, and that's where we win, and that's where everyone will eventually win at some point in time. So adding things to the case and evidence and things like that just is not going to help the case in any way. It's not going to make it a more powerful case unless you're looking to argue and debate the case. We have no intentions of doing that. Our plan goes right back to They didn't give due process, and they will never give you due process because they can't give you due process because they'll lose. And they don't have jurisdiction. So it's very simple. I don't know of any case really out there that doesn't fall into those two categories. And we can talk some more about that in open forum if anybody's got any questions on that. So as far as going forward with adding any other papers to the case, it's not going to do anything more for the case, at least not here. And remember, these papers, and then there are people that are giving us affidavits, some of which I think we've already filed in the courts, but we've compiled quite a few of them. We intend on filing them. There's no point at this moment to file these affidavits. If people want to continue to send in affidavits, we'll put them in our pile at some point. We will file them. And we'll probably file them when we start to get some traction. And then all these affidavits have to be dealt with, okay? So it'll be somewhat helpful in the future, not necessarily helpful now, but it'll be helpful in the future. As far as the getting back to the habeas corpuses, which we're not doing at the moment, but again, we're hoping to get back to that, but the non-judicial foreclosures, okay? That's something that maybe we can get a little, that's what's going to get us the traction ultimately, once we start to get some wins there. But again, you know, we're going to try to move forward on some defaults and we'll see where that goes. We've spoken about going after the magistrate in the case, and I think that's our next step. You know, we've been so busy with so many things, and of course we had a holiday this past week, so it kind of blew out a lot in the week, so
we're not getting... lift up the little...
We're not getting the production of the work what we'd like to get. and again, you know, we need more help. Anybody that can volunteer help for anything, you know, get a hold of Jan, and there's lots of committees and different things that we got going. Now, I guess that pretty much answers that question. What else you got, Jan?
Okay, the second question is, earlier this year, Brent said that judges have the right to hold people in contempt of court. And this person takes exception to this statement. It clearly states in the Fifth Amendment to the Bill of Rights in the U.S. Constitution, quote, nor be derived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, end of quote. If in common law, no man rules over another, how can a judge deprive you of your liberty and property without having a jury trial? I believe that it is up to the jury to order a contempt charge against the individual in question and not a judge.
Well, you know, I kind of agree with that. You know, I think, is Brent here? Anyone seen Brent? Brent, are you here?
Look, I think when you're in his court, he has control of that court. Otherwise, it makes a farce of it. If I tell you to be quiet and you tell me to shut up and I got to go get a jury to punish you, the courts would be packed. Nobody would do it. He has to have a certain authority.
Again, this is a unique problem. And, you know, because a situation can erupt where people will come in with disrespect and so on, we can't just say, well, let's do away with this right because we don't have another way to deal with this. I think there could be ways to deal with this. First of all, that person could be removed from the court. I mean, that would be one solution. But I do kind of look at, I don't like the idea of any one individual putting another individual into a prison and holding them for, you know, months or days or weeks or whatever, without the consent of the people. Because again, it gets back to the consent. And I know this throws a wrench in the way we think and the way we're doing things, and I agree with that. There's a problem here. But look at, if it is a civil case, okay, they can remove the person from the court. If it is a criminal case and the court is in motion and things are happening and there's a jury in place, then they can do a hearing for contempt of court. Maybe, and again, I don't know if this has ever happened before, but possibly, maybe the sitting grand jury, a hearing could be brought before the sitting grand jury, and the sitting grand jury can take it into some control. It's something to think about, and I don't know what the solution to this is, but I do see the violation of a person's unalienable right being violated here when a judge or an individual who's a political animal can put someone in jail, and sometimes they put them there what they call indefinitely. Look what they've done to the Bundys, because they think they have the power and the authority to do what they do. The law is crystal clear, okay? If you can't prove that these people are going to run, if they don't have a record of running, and they've been, you know, they've never caused a problem before, you got to let them go. And they need to come to court. And as long as they keep coming to court, well, that's fine. They should not be held in jail. I mean, if it was a violent crime, of course, I think we could think differently on that. But generally speaking, they should not be able to be held in jail because some judge makes that ruling. And nevertheless, they also have to be, if they're going to be let loose, they have to be given bail. And bail has to be reasonable. And you got to remember, look, you got to look at the crime that we're talking about. If it's a criminal offense, what is the crime? Number one, what's going to be involved in trying to recapture this person if they do take off? The pressure on the person that's putting the money up, if someone else is putting the money up, is helpful to that too. So there's a lot of different things that come to play, and I really think we as a people have to rethink these things once we recapture the courts, because these judges have destroyed the courts with their rules and their procedures and their processes, which is, you know, nothing but really, most of these rules are okay, but goodness, they've really put things together in such a way to really take control over we the people. So I agree with, who was it that sent this in? Jan?
You want the person's name?
Yeah, the first name.
Richie.
Richie. Okay, yeah, I agree with Richie. And if Friend's not here, maybe we'll bring it up to him and see his opinion on this. I'd like to get into a discussion with him, and I think maybe we could possibly change his
opinion. There's two kinds of contempt that a judge can give you. One of them is to get a performance out of where he can hold you until you comply. And there's no set time on that. I mean, they have traditionally, they don't go over so much. And the other one is just a punishment, X many days, 7 days, whatever they do, I don't know. But there is a difference. And like that woman who refused to give the gay marriages, he put her in contempt until she agreed to do them. You remember that? That should have went before a jury, I think, something like that.
Yeah, well, again, you know, you give power to people, they'll abuse it. And that's exactly what's going on right now with these judges. I agree it's a problem. You know, as Jefferson said, I'd rather be troubled by too much liberty. This is kind of a paraphrase to his quote, but I'd rather be troubled by too much liberty than not enough. So the problems of having liberty, and this is a problem, having liberty, is something we need to learn to live with. And I think we can create a procedure here. You know, if the people have to make this agreement and decision, there's always, always a sitting grand jury. At least there should be always a sitting grand jury. If business is, if there's not enough things going into the court where, you know, the grand jury is only coming together once a week here or there, well, then the grand jury might be pulled together for a month, and they might have to come in once a week for that month, and then you change the people again. Depending on how busy you get, you can't hold people every day for a month. I mean, maybe for whatever the duration of a case is, if it's a trial jury, of course. But a grand jury, I think, you know, if there's that much business going on, so to speak, that the grand jury has to be making, hearing cases every day, you know, 5 days a week and week after week after week, then probably the grand jury needs to be refreshed every week then. I don't know. But that's my thinking. You can't take people out of their lives and bring them into this situation. Nevertheless, there should always be a sitting grand jury, a grand jury that could be called upon. And, you know, and if the situation takes place on a Tuesday and they can make it in on a Thursday, you could bring it before the people, you know, make your argument concerning this situation and let the people decide. I don't see a problem with that. I just don't like this idea with judges with this power. They've proved to themselves, they've proved that they're not honorable. They've proved that they can't be trusted. They've proved that their likelihood is to really take advantage of the system and their power and authority. They've proven that. over and over and over again. So anyway, that's my thinking, and I know others might have a different opinion, but we do have to work this out somehow. I think we have to rethink how that process would work. But again, most of these contempt of court, in my opinion, is removing the person from the courtroom. Get out of here.
Remember that report we read from some time back in the 1940s? I think it was a New York grand jury. They didn't have any specific cases, but they went in and audited government offices just to make sure there was no impropriety going on. So a grand jury can make work for itself if it wants to check something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to have a complaint in front of you. I don't know that they're using grand juries like that anymore, though. They hated that.
Well, I think it's time to get back to that, don't you?
The grand jury used to write a prescription, and it wasn't always necessarily an indictment, right? It was an information. If they found something wrong, it didn't rise to a crime, but they would say, look, at this department's a little shoddy. They're doing this. They're doing that. Yeah, I definitely think we need that because there's no oversight. And today, the grand juries would be investigating all these judges that we're talking about because they're always operating outside of authority and jurisdiction and everything else. And the trouble is they're not letting the grand juries investigate what they perceive to be crimes. And, you know, they're only investigating what the prosecutor brings to them.
Right, and that's what we're doing is we're trying to bring those things back by we the people taking control. And once we get control, then we will be that way again. And I think the availability for a judge to be able to call, to have a hearing, to decide what could be done, if they really feel it's necessary that the person needs to be held for a period of time until they answer or whatever the case may be, I think the grand jury is more than capable of making that decision. And I think the grand jury will probably go along with a judge that puts a good case before them. I think he's got to have a hearing. I don't like this idea of these judges having this power that they constantly abuse. But that's my opinion, and I know other people have. And again, Brent has a different opinion on this. Hopefully, I'd like to really get a conversation with him on this and maybe try to change his mind, or maybe he'll change mine. But I find it difficult to believe that my mind could be changed on this because, again, it gets right back to due process. You can't incarcerate a person without due process. If there's a contempt of charge, there must be a hearing. And if there's a hearing and the decision is going to be that someone's going to be put in jail for a period of time, only the people can make that decision. I think the Constitution is clear on this. Common law is clear on this. It's just crystal clear on this. Why are we going to make an exception? Because we've been doing it for 200 years? I mean, look at people make the argument with cases when they become Supreme Court justices, for instance, and the precedence of Roe versus Wade has been sitting so long, we're not going to change that. You know, and they have to say that because it's a political thing, they'll never get in. And also it's maybe a lie to some of those people or those who really know about, you know, someone like Scalia maybe, and I'm not sure how he was questioned on this, but I know Bork was silent on it. He refused to answer. And some of these other judges I've seen refused to answer, you know, and rightly so. Rightly so. You know, don't judge me to be a judge on a political thing. You know, judge me to be a judge as being... holding up justice and obedience to the Constitution and understanding the Constitution. Good.
What about, look at these judges hold people in contempt anytime they want. They have all these stupid hearings, you know, hearings in the back, hearings that are not hearings. How about if they could only hold somebody in contempt when the jury was seated in the room and make that jury make the decision?
If the jury's in a room, absolutely.
Right. Well, I'm saying he's unable to hold anybody in contempt unless the jury's sitting there and the guy disrupts the official proceedings. They're having all these hearings, like in the Patriots, you know, in the Nevada case, they wouldn't let them speak. And if they and no constitution, and you can't tell what your mind was, you know, why you drove across the country to go there, what your perception was, which has to do with intent. And she wouldn't let them talk. When they tried to talk, she said, I'll hold you in contempt. Well, there was no jury at that time.
Right. Well, then the only way they can get any contempt charges to hold that would give some time would be to get a hold of the grand jury, unless the jury has already been chosen for that case. Then you can call that jury in. But at that time, those periods of times, I think the jury is chosen right before the trial. They don't choose the jury until the trial starts. But you know what? Maybe it's time to turn that around. If there's going
to
be a trial by jury and they're going
to
have all these hearings and stuff, maybe they should choose the jury right up front, get the jury into the game, and then if they need them, they can call them in to answer these questions and make these decisions. Look at, and you know, if an individual, you know, in order for them really to be held properly, you have to get an indictment. You know, maybe we can live with serious crimes to be held for a few days until the grand jury could come into session to make a decision on it. Fine. That should be able to be accomplished, 72 hours or something. And then it could be proposed to the grand jury that, okay, we'd like to hold this individual because of the type of crime it is very violent. And they got to make their case to the grand jury. And they have to show some reasonable evidence that that this is the guy to some degree. You know, the jury's going to have to make that decision. But again, you know, in most cases, you know, even criminal cases, it doesn't necessarily call for jail time. It calls for restitution ultimately, number one. Number two, also, you know, like they accused that guy, what was it, Montana, I think it was, that dug the hole and he came to court every time through his first part. And then there was a, I think it was a, what happened with that case? There was something happened and it was retried again. And then they wanted to hold him, okay? Oh, no. Matter of fact, they did retry him. I think he was tried twice. But the thing is that they wanted to hold him while he was going through his appeal. There was no reason to hold him for his appeal, number one. There was no reason for a jail sentence for that kind of if it is a crime, no reason for a jail sentence. Look, if you're polluting, you know, waterways, that is a crime. Does that crime call for a jail? I don't think so. I think it calls for restitution. That's what it calls for. But you're going to have to prove it, too, you know. And in the case of the guy in Montana, we know he wasn't guilty of anything. Okay, they just want him off his property, and they probably accomplished that by putting him in jail. They destroyed his life. But again, you know, the people are held all the time, and the law is not applied, and put in jail, and it's constant. And we have to have enough of it, because eventually one day it may be us that's going to be abused and sitting in jail. So it's got to stop. And, you know, contempt of court, I think, if for a serious matter on a contempt of court, I think a fine is much better. And again, if you're going to do a fine, jury or the grand jury's got to decide that too. This jail stuff just is not the right way of dealing with these things. So, anyway. All right, I guess that's it for that. Robert, I guess you have a report on what's going on out west?
Yeah, I do. But first off, on Joe Robertson.
Oh, by the way, hold on a second, Robert. Gerard, Jan had to walk away for a while. I don't know if he's going to be back or whatever. And at some point, I'm going to pass the mic over to you. So try to be awake over there.
Hey, yeah, Robert. Yeah, okay.
Well, Joe Robertson's appeal was just disapproved. Now, he's been in a halfway house, and Friday he will be released to go home. So,
does he still have a home?
As far as I know, yes, he still has a home. He just doesn't have any rights anymore.
What do you mean rights now? Rights to the land?
Well, now he has been convicted. So, I mean, he can't own a gun. Or, you know, everything you lose when you are a convicted felon.
Right. And again, that's something also that needs to be changed. But yes.
Absolutely. But now on to the Bundy trial. Maybe it should be produced as a made-for-TV comedy. But when they finally got to make opening statements, Ryan Bundy made opening statement, and he talked a lot about the Constitution, talked about what they've done to him and family, and anyway, he talked at length. And it seemed from the reports I'm getting that he just totally had the jury mesmerized. And when he finished, nobody in the courtroom said anything for at least 2 or 3 minutes. It was just total silence. I guess the jury was just sitting there looking at him and the judge and everybody, and the people in the gallery all had tears in their eyes. And one of the, in fact, Cliven's attorney afterwards said it was the most brilliant opening statement he has ever heard in his life. Very impressed with him. But anyway, after that, the judge told Ryan that he was allowed to go home for Thanksgiving. And now the prosecution is still putting on their case. And every time they put somebody up there, they say something that tells the defense attorneys that there's evidence being held that they haven't seen. And so they immediately hit on the prosecutors to produce that evidence that they're hiding. And the judge has seen how bad the prosecutors are lying and hiding things, that now she's siding with the defense for that evidence to be produced. The other day, they put on an official from the BLM up on the stand. And Ryan was cross-examining, and he got the guy to say that he had no idea what the Constitution said he's never read the Constitution, and he was praising Ryan for his knowledge of the Constitution. Ryan handed him his dog-eared handbook of the Constitution and asked him to read a part of it, and the judge allowed it, and the guy read that portion, but all he could do is just praise Ryan for his knowledge of the Constitution. And today again they caught the prosecution hiding a video. It's actually a audio, but it seems that at some point during the Bundy standoff, two FBI agents, well, I don't know if it was FBI or BLM, but they went to the Bundy ranch, I guess, not in uniform or anything, and hiding their identity, but they got a hold of Cliven's son-in-law and talked to him, and they tried to bribe him to be an informant against his family. And that was the recording that they caught him trying to hide today. And they tried their thing about, well, it's irrelevant, it really doesn't exist. And the judge looked at the prosecutors and said, you have 1 hour to produce it.
This was a recording?
Yeah.
And they were trying to set the stage in this court case, the prosecutor doing this?
It's all part of evidence that they hid from in the last two trials, that they refused to let be heard in the last two trials. So now it's coming out. And so now it's opening the door for, you know, to affect the last two trials there, because it's these defense attorneys are bringing out evidence that's been hidden and not allowed in the last two trials. And the prosecutors are crying now that defense is belittling them. In fact, when this one BLM official was being cross-examined by Ryan, and he was praising Ryan, prosecutors were sitting over there with their heads in their hands like, oh no, why are you doing this, you know, type of thing. But I think this case is falling apart. It's almost every day they're finding something new that the prosecution has tried to hide, videos mainly.
Robert, the original thing was a video that they had set up that kind of showed what was going on between the BLM and the ranchers, right? And they claimed they didn't have it, right?
Yeah, so They had three cameras set up, and they tried to hide that.
Right, so those were videos. Now you're saying they have a recording of two FBI agents trying to bribe one of the Bundys, one of the Bundys.
His stepson. His son-in-law. To be a spy.
Right.
An informant against his own family.
Okay. Want to make
There's
sure
a big, that caused a bunch of arguments today. And in fact, because of it, the jury won't be in until 1 o'clock tomorrow. They're having a big discussion until that time. So I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but it sounds like the judge is getting kind of upset.
Now, this jury, don't they have spies in this jury, some people who work for the federal government or something?
I don't know. That's been discussed, but I don't know if there's any real evidence of that.
Okay.
But the jury is asking questions, and the questions they're answering is things that the prosecution has been trying to keep quiet about, and that is they asked the question of who has control of the water rights, state or federal. And so they got their answer that it was the state. And so then another question was, well, when do we get to hear about the water rights? Well, that that just about kills the prosecution.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with that, Bundy's will bring in a state expert witness who will testify that the Bundys own their water rights, that they bought them from the state. And also, you know, they've been talking about how the Bundys owed millions to the BLM for grazing fees. Comes out, from what I understand, to be like $8,815 total. And they've also produced, the defense has produced several checks written by Cliven to the state of Nevada for grazing fees.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the judge is probably seeing that case is gone.
Yeah.
Hey, Robert, what happened with that juror that was seen having dinner with the prosecutor the day before?
I never ever was able to get anything more out of that.
Okay, because I remember that one instance, and that was
pretty... Yeah, well, they hushed... That got hushed up real quick.
Okay.
Okay, Robert, so, are we done?
I'm done.
Okay. All right, do we have anybody else? Any other announcements or anything? I know Jan didn't mention anything. I think he's away, but I think he only mentioned Robert. But, okay, I guess...
Ollie's in the queue.
Ollie's in the queue. Okay, let's open Ollie up to see if he's okay. Do you have an announcement, Ollie?
Yeah, I just had a comment in that for that last discussion. Another thing they uncovered last week, the a report that's been covered up since the beginning. The government had a threat assessment report. Okay, and the BLM said it was very high threat. The FBI said it was minimal, if no threat. And the Las Vegas LEO said it was minimal to no threat. And like Robert says, all this stuff is coming out. All these reports and videos of what really went down is coming out now. Now, you see, that the Bundys are there. The Bundys were there. They know what happened. They got a good idea what's in discovery, and they are systematically bringing this out through questions to the witnesses. But that's a comment I wanted to make.
Okay, thank you. All right, is Brent here?
I haven't seen him.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about our sheriff's program. We have almost everything ready to go out there on our website. People can go out to take a look at it if they want. No one's able to sign up yet. But we've got the whole process pretty much connected, but you can't sign up yet because there's a few things we still haven't finished up on. But clearly by Monday morning, or by Monday, next Monday, Carl has assured us that we will be done. And we may be done Wednesday, Thursday this week. I don't know. But as soon as we can open up, we will put out the email to everyone to let everybody know. We're really hoping, I'm going to really suggest very, very strongly that everybody go out to the, once we open it up, okay, join up and give $5 a month or more over on that sheriff's plan. If we can get our whole membership up to give $5 a month, in 2 months, we'd be able to get all the necessary money we need to go forward and order everything and get it done and get this whole project done in 2-3 months. It really will take more time to get it printed and, you know, off to the printer and get it printed and, you know, schedule for that, dried and then shipped out. It'll probably take a month to get that done. But then it may take a couple of weeks if we have the money to get it out to all the sheriffs. So we can accomplish this quickly if we can really get a campaign going and get our membership behind this. But we're going to ask everybody to go out there and actually put in $5 a month or more and give a one-time gift if they can. In other words, maybe put in $5 a month, and if you can afford $50, a one-time donation, or $100, one-time donation, or even $20, or another $5. But looking for that extra money, we need to really hit the ground running on this thing. We need to collect the money and get this project going as quick as possible. So please, everybody consider that. And once we get moving, we're going to really be pushing people to put a little time in with us to make phone calls. Everybody should be able to make a couple of phone calls a week to our membership. We're going to lay out the plan on what has to be said. And it should be a short conversation to really get people interested. Go out, take a look, read the book, and read the front page, which is the key, reading the front page in the book. And that should convince anybody who's living in the Liberty Group to really get behind us and support this this project. So we really want to get moving on that. So the website should be completed as far as being able to sign up and start donating sometime this week, definitely by Monday. But hopefully it'll be done before that, and we'll get the email out on that. Let me see if there's anything else. Gerard, you got anything?
Not really.
Okay. All right, Brent, one more call for Brent. If Brent's not here, we'll move on to an open call. I was looking through the list before, and I didn't see him, so... All right, you want to take the controls and take it from here? I may switch computers in a short while.
Okay.
10, 15
yeah.
minutes, but go ahead.
Okay, let me... We have a 281 number. I don't know who that is. Oh, this is Crystal. Go ahead, Crystal. You're unmuted. Hello, Crystal. Can you hear me? I don't know. She just jumped up in there. She must be having trouble with her mic or something.
While we're waiting for Crystal, she is unmuted, yeah. While waiting for Crystal, let me just make one other point out there. You know, a lot of people, they try to get a hold of me during the week. They have questions about a case they're doing or whatever the case may be. You know, my purpose, because I can't answer the phone. I'm just so overworked with so many things. I just can't answer all the phone calls that come in. And I clearly can't answer all the emails that come through either. That's why we're here, both Gerard and myself, every week, every Monday, for 3 hours. Anybody has any questions or anything, information, anything they want to know, here's the place. One of the key things, if people have a question about a case or something, you know, basically they have to make sure they're educated, or we'll tell them how they can get educated, and then we can maybe assist them here or there with some things. But, you know, we can't get too involved in any, we can't get really get involved in anyone's case, with the exception of the simplicity of things like habeas corpuses and these foreclosures, because both of those issues are extremely important to people today. Lots of people are losing their homes. Lots of people are in jail and don't belong there. And so, you know, and again, this builds the case that we have, that we're making, is that this judiciary is out of control. I would like to do a lawsuit, a couple of different lawsuits, separate from what we're doing. But again, we lack money to do it. We need funding ourselves here at National Liberty Alliance. One of the lawsuits I'd like to sue the judiciary directly, and for a number of different things. But one of the main things I'd like to sue them for is, where do they get off to decide that we need to give them, in the federal level, $400 in order to be for a case to be heard? That's a crime to begin with. And the state, I know here in New York, they charge $310, and then every time you make a motion, it's another $45 or $40, whatever it is. I mean, there's no statutes out there that say we have to do these things, and there couldn't be. So it's not written in their rules. I don't know where it's coming from. I'm going to try to investigate that. But where did this originate from? But you know, who are these people that think that they can charge us to go into the court and pay for justice? I would like to sue the judiciary and that once and for all. You know, there's a lot of different things. I think we need to do another lawsuit on the gun issue. They've never answered our paperwork on the gun issue, but the gun issue was run under the case that we have open right now. We need to actually open another case up and get its own number and do it just on that. And one of the first order of business, I think we need to go in for the money first, so that we can go into the courts without having to pay this money. Because coming up with $400 to go into the federal court every time, you know, it's difficult for me to put that out. And we barely get enough to survive. And while we're on that subject matter, let me make the note that we are having trouble surviving. I mean, we do have a little bit of more reserve left to get through another month or so, but we're still running in a deficit. And the money, someone gave a pretty large gift about a month ago. And was able to catch up and pay last month's bills, pay this month's bills, and now coming up on another month's bill in December. After this, we're going to be running into a deficit again unless we get more donations. So please, anybody that's not giving $5 a month or more, please do that. Over on the Sheriff's page, we're using a different process where people will have access to their subscriptions. We'll call it a subscription. It's a donation, but we call it a subscription for legal purposes. But in any event, they'll have access to that. They can go in anytime they want. They can shut it down. They can change it. They can change the. I think they can change the date on when they actually want to start their payments, or they have to change a date for future payment or something. I think they might be able to do that. I'm not sure on that. But, you know, if someone's giving $5 a month and they wanted to give more, maybe turn that up to 10. Or maybe someone's giving $20 and they want to bring that down. You know, it gives them more flexibility. And sometimes people get into a tough time and they have to cut off their donations to us for a while. They'll be able to go shut it off and then turn it back on when they want. I think they'll have to resubmit at that point. So we got a program or a software or a company we're working with. I'm not sure how that all works. I'd have to talk with Carl. Well, we got something working so that people have more flexibility and the ability to be able to control what they give and when they can give it. We'd like to try to, I'm going to talk with Carl about moving that very same process over to National Liberty Alliance, and hopefully that'll make it a little better. We have been having some problems with PayPal. It's very difficult when you have a lot of people on your lists trying to find someone, and they don't remember what email they used. They give me an email, I'm looking for that email. They, you know, people who need to stop payments for one reason or another, and they'll eventually call me, and I'll go looking for it. Maybe they've given me a wrong email, you know, it's just so difficult to find them from our end. Well, on the anybody's given through PayPal, they do have the ability to go into PayPal and click on, I think it's money, and then they can get down into the subscriptions that they have. And when they get into subscriptions, they can see that, you know, what it is that they want to cancel. You know, the payment going to NLA, they just click on cancel and it's over. So they can stop their payment if they need to. I did see, and I'm going to try to work an experiment out with this week. We did see that PayPal has a cancel subscription. I'm not sure how that worked. We put that up on the new site, on the Sheriff's site, so people can cancel their PayPal subscription by just going out there and clicking that button. I'll have to call up PayPal this week and find out exactly how that works, because I'm trying to figure out how that makes the connection. Maybe people have to be a member to give on a subscription level, so maybe the connection is there. The information is connected there somehow. I don't know. Or maybe when they click on the cancel subscription, they're asked for maybe their email. And when they put the email in, maybe that's how they connect to see that this is the person that needs to be canceled out. But we do want to make it a little more easier. I know some people have gotten frustrated because we couldn't do it from our end, and we tell them to do it how they would do it from their end, and maybe they're not savvy enough to do it or whatever, and it's been a little complicated. So, you know, we do want to try to work something out to make that better. We had also, I just want to get everything out in the open here on this also. We've had over the past months, quite a few months, I think three issues, there could be four, where people were double charged. Two of the incidents turned out that they weren't really double charged. We had shut the website down for the payment side of things. It was closed down a little too long. I think it was almost 4 weeks, but it was over 3 weeks. It wasn't planned to be shut down that long, but it ended up being shut down that long. So they was doing that, I think, we did it recently because we moved the site. It was shut down, I think, for 5 or 7 days. But on the time before, there was some kind of a problem when Carl was moving some software programming or something, I don't know, he shut it off so that people wouldn't get double-clipped on that. But on that issue, I think one or two people did get double-charged. It was a double charge. We did fix that. And there were two other issues where people were double-charged, but it wasn't a double charge. Again, what happened was they were not charged 1 month, and then when we turned things back on, they were charged for the month that was passed, and their due time to be paid again came up, so they saw two charges at the same time. And so we try to be very careful with this, and you know, everything is automated, so we have no real control over this. But we do have a new system where people can have more control over their monies if they're double charged, or again, if they feel they got to reduce it for a while, or if they feel that they can add, put a little more in, they'll be able to have the flexibility to go make those changes on their own and cancel if that's what they feel they want to do for whatever reasons. So anyway, we do need money, though. If anybody can help out, please give. Back to who was talking? You, Gerard, or did we have a call? I think Crystal.
Well, we're trying to get Crystal, but I don't think she's there. Crystal, speak now or forever hold your peace. We'll go to the next one.
Or at least until the next time you can click the button to get into the queue.
Right. That's forever. Okay, I'm going to go to the next caller here. And it's, I don't know who it is. It's 281 area code.
Yeah, this is Cody Hare in Central Illinois.
How are you doing, Cody?
Good. I really commend your guys' work. I joined a couple weeks ago, and it's kind of exciting to find you all. And I donated $50 a couple weeks ago trying to get the ball rolling. I'll try to be a good supporter of this fine group. But I'm in the oil business in Southern Illinois, and I'm curious the legalities of all these administrative proceedings. I've had them fine me for having equipment sitting on my own oil lease, which oil leases are supposed to be considered real property, just like owning a piece of property. And they're not small fines, $600-$700. I read your 90-page brief, and I was curious to, you know, there's some talk in there that these administrative courts are not legal unless you agree to. I was curious about that. Is it when it's commercial?
Yeah. Let me ask some questions there because you know there are certain things that are commercial that are controlled that are controlled, and I would imagine oil, of course, would be part of that. And so there are statutes that control the commercial process, the way things are done, and so on. And so anybody who kind of comes into that. And get into that particular trade, and they do end up signing up to that statutory process for those issues only. I'll give you an example on a place where most people don't sign up and they're pushed into it, and that's with the state with the unemployment. People who hire people. Don't have to participate with unemployment, paying into unemployment and getting involved with that. They do have to just let their people know that they're not participating with that, and the people have the opportunity to go to work or not go to work for those people.
You can opt out of that legally. There's been court cases to.
You just don't participate with it because it's a total administrative process. I've been through the whole process myself. It's a total administrative process, and you have to sign in. You have to agree. And I can be an employer and not be involved in that. I'd rather work a better way out with employees to assist them. Why get involved with the state to waste the money to begin with? And they just they bill you and they get they're so outrageous. They're like the IRS in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's just outrageous. And but go ahead.
Well, how do we define? Okay, so when I read when I read all these legal briefs, it all sounds good. But what's the reality when it says that statute law doesn't apply to the people? Is that when you're in commercial business, does it apply to you according to the Constitution, or is it?
Well, again, you have to look into your Constitution. Congress has certain powers, if we're talking federal, okay? Congress has certain powers. It's found under Article 1, Section 9. And you go through that list there and then see what powers they do have. They do have the power to put certain restrictions and controls on commercial business. For instance, let's take truckers. Truckers are, they run the road and there's a lot of weight on trucks and so they pay, first of all, diesel and even, gasoline, Look, we pay for our roads through gasoline taxes, okay? They don't need to collect taxes any other way. There's plenty of money there. Whenever there's an emergency, they tap into the gasoline costs. If you notice the changes in the gasoline prices when we had all those disasters from the hurricanes, all of a sudden gas went through the roof, okay, and it starts to settle down after a while. Well, that's an acceptable way of dealing with an emergency and getting funding. So our roads are paid for that way. Truckers are controlled on the road, and they pay additional fees and of course, they have certain requirements, and they have the waiting stations and stuff to weigh their trucks. They don't want them over a certain weight. All that makes sense because, look, at when you build a road, and I used to build roads, you build a town road or you build a county road or you build a state road. They all have different specifications because they have different anticipations and weights and traffic loads, weights of vehicles and so on. You know, you can't take a truck up a driveway. You know, you got a heavy truck coming up a driveway, the driveway is minimum construction.
Yeah. Is it your position that the heavy vehicle licensing taxes are probably, $2,000 for the last 60,000 pound vehicle I registered, it's like $1,900 for the year. Right. Are you guys saying that because it's commercial?
That is a lawful tax, a lawful control, a lawful process. Now, maybe it's too much. And then maybe an argument could be made, and a case could be taken, and I'm sure could happen. But as far as the right or the ability for the government to make these charges, to control this, it makes all the sense in the world. It's logical, and we've empowered Congress to do these things. Now, what Congress does, of course, is they've overstepped their authority. I would say, I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say well over 90% of what Congress does is illegal. I don't think I'm exaggerating at all.
90%, Jesus, man.
Yeah, I don't think I'm exaggerating. Now, any statute that controls the behavior of an individual is no law at all. It's null and void. It has no power, no authority. It's as if it never had been enacted. Because you can't control my behavior. So if I want to travel in a car, I have a right, an unalienable right to travel, and I can get into my car. I don't need license plates. I don't need a license. And I don't necessarily need insurance, but I better not get into an accident because you have to pay for the damages, and you could get into an accident. It doesn't make sense to drive without insurance. But
I got another question on that Organic Act of 1871. I didn't really find any other information when you guys referred to it in the brief. It supplanted Republican government. Can you explain that?
That's right.
A little bit.
Yeah,
more
I don't have that before me, but maybe when I take a break, I'll come in a little later in the program and read through it and show you.
Okay.
The Organic Act is very slick because really what it does is it really, if you read the language very carefully, it created a municipality which created another power and authority, and it's a power inside of a power. And ultimately what it is a country inside of a municipality, inside of a another municipality inside of a state, which really isn't a state at all, actually, inside of Washington, D.C. in particular. So that they made Washington, D.C. ultimately a country is what they did. And it's very slick the way they did it. And they do things in pieces also. There is a lot of other legislation that came after and some legislation that might even have come before, but particularly legislation that came after. And it's a building block. They're constructing a statutory prison for something. In this case, it's a statutory prison for the entire United States because the whole thing is set up to really destroy America and do it very carefully and transform it in such a slow way that people don't even realize it. People don't even know the law. They don't know the Constitution. They don't know what rights are. And when you tell them what freedom really is, sometimes they get afraid of it, because it calls for a lot of responsibility. Or they don't think things can work out that way. You can't give people that much freedom. Well, of course you can. People will surprise you. The mass of the people will totally surprise you because we are a social, if I might use the word animal, I don't really mean that, but sort of a phrase to use. We're a social being, and we will yield to each other. I remember in New York City when I was young, they had the big blackout, and I remember coming through New York City on a bus going home, and everything was dark. But everybody was cooperating in New York City. People were stopping, other people were going, everybody yielded each way. So in the real busy areas, there were people who came into the streets and acted like traffic cops and, you know, stopped the traffic to let this through and bring. Everybody cooperated, you know. People don't realize that there's a lot of things we don't need. People will cooperate.
What is the status of the lawsuit? I assume it's filed. From what I there was a letter from Cuomo's attorney asking for more time. That's about as far as I got on some of the documents.
Yeah, and that was kind of silly because it had nothing to do with the original case. It had something to do with paperwork they were just filing, and it wasn't actually a lawsuit filing paper that we had filed. So they never really responded to the case at all, number one. They kind of put us on ignore, and they try to throw us out of the court. We're still filing papers. But most of what we're filing really is we're filing a criminal case against the criminals inside of our government. And so if you read all of our paperwork through, you'll see really that's the stage. We put Congress on notice. We also let them know and advise them, and they know, that there's a conspiracy to destroy America. We laid all that out and how it's going through. What they're doing with trying to take weapons away from us. And, you know, so really our case is really all about subversion against the United States of America and the people by enemies both foreign and domestic. And putting all this information to the court, we have indicted 8 judges down in New York City at the earlier part of our when we began, and okay. We've indicted a judge, a federal judge, and we have a lot of other indictments we're doing. We don't want to really do a lot of indictments right now because, you know, they're not going to move through, but we will do them, and eventually they will move through because we'll get, you know, really the critical mass at some point in time. And there's other ways we may get this critical mass. You know, with this sheriff's program, it has all the potential of getting us critical mass and getting us to, if we get the sheriffs to really obey the law and understand the Constitution and enforce the law, if we can make that happen, that will empower us. We're working with the president. We send the president everything we do. He's got a copy of it. Jeff Sessions has been getting a copy of it. It's been going on for over a year with the president. We started when he was campaigning. He was interested in us. We've been giving him information since. Jeff Sessions, since he was appointed, we've been sending him information. And a few other people, the judiciary, what is it called, the judiciary in Congress. So we've been sending them papers. And any of those issues could have a potential possibility of giving us critical mass. Critical mass will bring us right into the courts. We'll start putting people in jail. Now, the other thing is Trey, what's that guy's last name? Goni? Trey
Gowdy?
Gowdy. Trey Gowdy. I understand recently that the president, I think it was the president that gave it to him, gave him the highest rating, again, I don't know what you would call it, but the ability to look at documents that, you know, you have to have a high security level to be able to look at these documents. And he's been complaining that he can't get this information. I understand the president has given him the power, the highest power possible to look at anything. And so
gave him the highest possible security clearance.
That's what it's called, security clearance. Thank you, Robert. So he's got the highest possible security clearance to be able to look into anything, which is great. You know, we need to intensify more on Trey Gowdy. You know, I've heard Trey Gowdy mentioned numerous times, about those people who come up to Congress and plead the Fifth. And we need to educate Trey Gowdy. He's an educated guy, but there's a few things he lacks. He needs to understand what the Supreme Court has ruled on numerous times. These people have a duty to speak. And when they don't speak, when they have a duty to speak, that's fraud and that's a crime. So when these people that are with the IRS or with whatever government agency they may come up with, and they got to give an account to Congress, and then they plead the Fifth Amendment, you know, the right to remain silent, you know, these people who have a duty to speak, they can't use that in their job, you know, coming up before Congress in what they're responsible to address and give an account of. So if they don't speak and they want to plead the fifth because they are guilty of something, well, then someone underneath them needs to be brought in, and they have to give the answer to look at all those.
So the Supreme Court has ruled on that? And
numerous times.
Keep putting
numerous
up with
times.
That? Unbelievable.
Huh? Oh, yeah. But they have a duty to speak. Huh?
They have a duty to speak, but yet where's the congressional lawyers that are not, you know, that are not letting our Congress
because they're,
know?
They're not lawyers, they're statuettes or statutes or whatever you want to call them, because they don't know the law.
Jesus.
They just don't know the law. Look at
unbelievable.
When we go into court, how often have we heard them say, you know, judge, I don't understand. They don't understand the paperwork we're writing. Regular people read our paperwork and understand it. These clowns, well, they don't want to understand it. You know, they're used to a certain process of statutes. They're taught to operate under statutes, not to look at the Constitution, not to consider the Constitution. Bring in statutes, and everything's statutory. But that's not the law of the land.
But under commercial business, and it is correct that the statutes do apply as long as you're engaged in a commercial activity. Is that?
Well, wait a minute. Are you a corporation and do you have a license to do it? Are you a sole proprietorship or are you a corporation?
Well, no. Yeah, for the oil companies and LLC, but yeah, so for the business.
Yeah, so that's a corporation. So then there's a license they probably give you.
But it's the business that he's in. Certain businesses, he's
right.
In a commercial business that requires a certain, you know, statutory process that they have a right to do. But they abuse that too, I'm sure. I've never looked into what might be abusive and what might not be abusive. I mean, there's so much to look at there, and I don't have the time to look at.
Well,
that,
if you're
so
a sole proprietorship, does the law treat you differently? I mean, how does that?
Well, again, no. Not if you're not dealing with commercial activity in a sense. Look at, you got to ask yourself the question. You know, if you own a store, for instance, or you're an engineer or an architect, or if you're a general contractor, you know, unless you're involved in a commercial. Really a state or a federal, level, contract, where there's certain criteria and requirements, commercial requirements, that's one thing. As a builder, for instance, there are codes, and everybody adheres to the codes. I don't always adhere to the codes. Sometimes what I would do, like when I worked in, I used to do some work in the city here in New York, and you get so many problems with not New York City, but Poughkeepsie particularly. And you get problems with the corruption in the city, the corruption with the inspectors. And I never wanted to deal with it. And a friend of mine who was an architect trained me and told me, hey, he used to do a lot of my work for me. He says, you don't need to go deal with these people. Just let's file the papers. Let them know there's an architect on staff and that everything's going to be, inspected and certified by an on-site architect or an on-site engineer, and they don't even come out to see us. They do all the reports, they do all the inspections, and then we put it into the town and into the city, and the city has to accept it. Okay.
Excellent.
So you know that's a way to beat some of the problems, you know. But that's not commercially controlled. It's just controlled by certain building codes, okay? So it's kind of different.
Well, let me ask a question. Let's forget about an oil company. Let's talk about if somebody, I got a friend in Louisville, Kentucky, and he's been, his personal house, they fined him for, I don't know, something not quite right on the outside of his house. So is it? Are those statues or are those local?
They can't look at. I can put a sign up. I can paint my house pink. I can line it up with beer cans, and it's none of their business. But of course, they're going to try to make it their business.
And the only way to beat those is in federal court, because the state can't give you remedy. So you have to be willing to take it up into the federal court because it's a constitutional issue. Look at most of the zoning codes that they have are unconstitutional. And they can be beat at that level. But the trouble is, if you follow their court rules and the statutes and stuff, by the time you get there, they bleed you to death. You know what I mean?
Hasn't anybody ever, I mean, if one person wins, don't they have to throw out those rules then for everybody? I mean, I'm assuming somebody sued them in the federal court and won, and then how does that work?
Well, that's a good question, because look at, we could make some precedent cases, and you know, when we go into court, we don't bring in precedent cases. We bring in the law, period. Now, the law also, you know, it's American jurisprudence is the law. Every judge must comply, okay? American jurisprudence, generally speaking, is made up of a lot of the United States Supreme Court rulings, which over the past 200 years, most of them have been really great. There's a lot of stuff out there we use in the United States Supreme Court rulings. But when it comes up into a federal case in some federal district, that doesn't mean amount to a hill of beans, really, in another case when you're arguing it. You could use it, okay, and in a rightful way. But generally speaking, you know, they use it all the time. You know, you'll go in and fight a case, and they'll talk about some silly case here or a silly case there. And again, yeah, it has nothing to do with this case. It doesn't matter what they've done. Every case is unique on its own. So since they already accept that kind of thinking, it's very easy to pull a case in that you can use as a precedent and use it as weight. But bear in mind, if it is a really big constitutional issue and you make your case and you make your win and you lay it out, you know, the same argument could be made. You can refer to the case and make the same argument from that case in your case if it applies to your case.
Well,
and in that way, you can use it. But look, at all this stuff really is, look, at everything is logical, okay? What is right is really understood by most people. It's written in the hearts of men, ultimately. Everybody knows what's right and wrong, generally speaking. You know, there are a few exceptions to that. And there's a lot of stuff out there that you can use. You know, the gun issue, for instance, tremendous, tremendous amounts of stuff out there in the law that you can use, and it's powerful.
Yeah.
In history, it's powerful. I mean, read our paper on the Second Amendment, and it's extremely powerful.
I'm not sure I've read that specific. I think in the brief you talked about military grade weapons,
right?
But yet the Supreme Court has ruled that you know, some controls are allowed, I guess.
Well, that's null and void. You know, maybe we might agree if we're talking about a nuclear weapon. You know,
yeah.
but look at. Whatever the weapon of the day is, I heard a case, someone trying to make a case I heard recently where they said, wait a second, you can't have these guns. You know, a gun is, you know, where you got one musket and, you put a ball in and your powder and your stuffing and all that, however all that works, you know. And that's what wait a second, that was the military weapon of the day, okay? Whatever the military weapon of the day is, you know, that's your weapon. An AK or... an M16, fully automatic, people should be able to own without a problem.
But we've got the problem where we're allowing the Supreme Court to define the Constitution.
Well, remember, it's mostly the federal courts, not the Supreme Court. They may call them they don't call them the Supreme Court. They call them the federal court, district courts, and so on. And that's where all the bad decisions are made, in those federal courts. The Supreme Court is supposed to be, you know, repairing those decisions. Someone needs to bring these bad decisions to the United States Supreme Court, and they need to repair them. But there are some bad United States Supreme Court rulings, don't get me wrong. But there's more good ones than there are bad ones.
Was it Heller? I can't remember. It was that Heller case. I think somebody reminded us that we only won by, I think, one vote. I think it was a Heller case. I can't remember. Was it 5-4 or something? Where we only, you know, we just barely won. So
what was the issue on guns?
I'm not the.
It sounds familiar. That Heller case sounds familiar.
Well, there was a case also for the guys in Chicago. I don't remember which case is which, but I just remember them saying that. You know, it's very close, and I can't, like I said, it's one of the more recent rulings. It was like 5-4 or something. It just barely passed.
But bear in mind, when the United States Supreme Court makes a mistake, we can overrule it. We can render it null and void. We can prevent it from being brought into any criminal case. Look at, if they're going to come out after you for guns, it's a criminal case. Yeah. And if it's going to come to the jury, when the jury comes to understand, and you see, this is where our job is, you know, I don't know how much you know about what National Liberty Alliance is really doing. You know, we're building...
Well, I follow the FIJA guys for the Fully Informed Jury Association, so I know where you're going.
Okay, so you basically understand that. We need to get control of the administrations for the pulling together of the juries. And once we get that, we want fully informed juries. And we do have a jury handbook, which we're going to rewrite, and we want to get them back up on the market again. But, you know, the common law handbook for jurists, and we're also planning, you know, an orientation plan on how to orientate the people, you know, the trial juries or the grand juries, which pretty much is the same anyway. But they need to have in 8 hours, you can fully inform a jury. You can let them know about nullification. You can make it clear on the real meanings of the Constitution. Because, look, the Constitution is really simple. You just have to tell the people, just read it. That's all. There's no interpretation here. There's nothing strange here. You know? And when there's little things that maybe looks a little hard or looks a little, well, I'm not sure what it means, well, you go back to the original. You know, discussions. You go to the Federalist Papers or the Anti-Federalist Papers. Jefferson made that point. Go back to the debates and the conclusions of those debates, and you'll understand exactly. And the Supreme Court has ruled that even this couldn't be understood without bringing in the common law, you know. So, you know, once you inform a jury of the Bill of Rights, and they come to an understanding, and this is not this doesn't require any major education or anything, it's just absolute logic. And this is how, you know, Madison and Jefferson, you know, defeated the enemy through the federal, you know, in the Federalist Papers, they created the Constitution. The Anti-Federalist Papers made some changes, and then they really concluded the matter. And that was kind of late on, you know, it really didn't have too much influence of the Constitution, but it did have some. But a lot of the states refused to sign on without a Bill of Rights. And that was the working of Jefferson and Madison. Jefferson was out of the country. He was working with Madison. Madison was the mouthpiece, and he made sure it happened. And the key to this 10 amendments is just so unique and so masterful. It's genius, in my opinion, because what it does is it requires the complete interpretation of everything in the Constitution in light of the Ten Amendments. So anything that violates any of those amendments is null and void, has no power, no authority. It does cause some problems and some uncomfortability trying to figure out how to deal with certain problems, like we were talking earlier, contempt of court, you know. So it does cause some problems, but look, I'd rather have more of those problems with having plenty of liberty than not having enough. You know,
you guys made the comment on the Commerce Clause being to make commerce regular versus to regulate it. What?
Correct. Right.
Is there any? I've always heard that it is to, you know, regulate means to regulate. What are you guys saying? The definition of the time was to make commerce.
Oh, the
regular?
Meaning of the time was to make sure everything moves and works like clockwork and doesn't cause problems. I mean, to make it regular throughout the nation. Look at, you know, I was involved with prepaid legal. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that, but prepaid legal is, you know, sort of, it's not really an insurance, but it is kind of an insurance. And you couldn't bring this into certain states. And I found this with a lot of insurance, companies that sell the insurance, and they were able to operate here, but they couldn't operate there. No, Congress prevents that, and it creates, monopolies and corners, different companies will corner the market here or there. So there's a lot of payoffs going on, which is the problem.
Because of state laws, you're saying, that prevented you from entering?
No, the federal government prevented the movement from one state to another, maybe this insurance here and not, you can't sell it there, or something to that effect. I know prepaid legal had a problem, and when I was involved with them, I'm in New York, and we had a totally different plan than most of the nation. But there were problems in other places. Florida, there was a problem down in Florida with prepaid legal. And that was all restrictions because they were regulating instead of making regular. And making regular is helping the process of commercial business flow and go along. while maintaining that there's no damages and that things are paid for, and you know, because they have the power to tax on this and regulate, to do the regulations to make it things move through. Jefferson talked about this. He says, you know, making things regular doesn't mean that federal government has to go dredge up the rivers, because transportation was mostly, you know, by river, a lot of things by boat and then train, but at a later time. But the thing is that the movement of the product, the government may be, he talked about this and said, you know, there are certain buildings and docks that need to be created by the government to make things regular. But as far as opening up the waterways for dredging and things of that nature, that's not up to the federal government. That's up to the people of the state.
Originally, there was problems with one state not letting you pass your product through them. Like, let's say you had a state in between you, and they would say, oh, no, you can't run your widgets across our borders.
Right.
And so, and you have another state where they want to buy them, and that state would block them out. So that was Congress's job, to make it regular. That was also
prevented one state to make this rule, another state to make that rule. No, the federal government makes the rule for regular for everybody.
Right. In order
you see, but once it becomes destructive and restrictive, now that goes right up against freedom, doesn't it?
Well, when do the licensing fees? Okay, so if you can charge a licensing fee for a vehicle, but yet the original Constitution said taxes had to be apportioned, how?
Well, you can charge a licensing fee for a commercial vehicle. You cannot charge a licensing fee for a vehicle, an automobile, what people normally travel with. If you're doing commercial business on the highway, that could be regulated. It's the flow of commercial business.
Even before the income tax amendment and all that. That was still the case during the
Well, the income tax amendment is a law that never was. Number one, the 16th Amendment doesn't say what they claim it says. The United States Supreme Court has ruled that. It really just put it back in its place. It has nothing to do with with salaries of people, with people working to make a living. It had nothing to do with that. So the Supreme Court has ruled that numerous times, number one. The other thing is the 16th Amendment really is never ratified, okay? That 16th Amendment and the 17th Amendment has never been ratified. This 16th Amendment, what the IRS uses in order to collect the taxes, that's all unconstitutional, it's unlawful, and, we need to battle that.
Yeah.
To drive a car, you don't need a driver's license. Of course, that doesn't stop the town courts from putting you in jail. And go figure this, at least in New York State, town courts and village courts are not courts of record. They're what's called, statutory courts, or they're called, how come I can't think of that word? What's that word, Gerard?
I'm sorry. What were you talking about?
Courts, the statutory courts, the town courts.
Oh, Nisi Prius.
Nisi Prius courts. Yes.
Nisi Prius.
They're Nisi Prius courts. They have no power to fine or incarcerate, and yet they believe they do. The police believe they do. The people believe they do. So guess what? They do.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you're supposed to protest, but you don't. And so they figure you're contracting in when you plea in their courts. Basically, that's what's going on. You cooperate with them, and so they have jurisdiction. They gain jurisdiction over you. And it's all word magic.
We have spent so much time trying to deal with this problem in the beginning, when we were learning. And we would try to challenge jurisdiction. And then they would decide that they got jurisdiction, and we saw that problem. You know, we went through a lot of things, and then we realized we missed the whole boat. But again, you learn from, doing and failing and doing and failing until eventually, the light comes on. Wait, let's do it this way. When you go into one of these town courts or village courts, first order of business is to file a paper, let them know they don't have the power or the authority, and they have to cease and desist. They usually I would say 50% of the time when I file a paper, it works. The other 50%, it doesn't. I don't have time to sue for, you know, $50 or $100. So those cases, I'll just pay the stupid fee and just move on. Not that I'm happy with it. Just don't have the time. But, the key thing is you can move it into the federal court for cause, and it doesn't cost money to go to move a case to the federal court for cause, and then you can go after the judge. Fraud on the court, to begin with, okay? They don't have the power and the authority. Violation of due process, they don't have it. Violation of jurisdiction, they don't have it. Each one of these is a violation of an unalienable right, and each one of those you can apply a value to, and sue that judge and sue the court, and if there's a prosecutor, there usually is these days, sue the prosecutor, all of them. So they get one shot with me. If I decide to take it into federal court, there's no second shot in their court. I would take it into federal court.
The other thing I want to interject here is you were wondering where's these cases where people went in and won that you could use it to bolster your case as precedent, so to speak. You know, using a former Supreme Court ruling on a similar case. Well, what happens is if you have a really good constitutional case and you make it and you write it really well, that federal judge looks at that when it comes in, and what he does is he calls down to the state judge and says, "Get this case out of my court because I'm going to be forced to rule for him, and you're going to lose this whole gravy train that you got." So what happens is, the state ends up dropping the case, and so the point is moot. Now the federal judge doesn't need to rule on it because you got your remedy, and that's what they do. And that doesn't go on the record. You never get to see what happened in those.
But if
they drop it, sometimes they'll even pay you the money, but it's not out of the there's nothing in the federal court. It's an out-of-court settlement. If they're going to drop it.
But if you are the plaintiff, you could bring it to default, okay? And that's the key. Or a counter-plaintiff, you could bring it to default. And whatever.
Yeah, but if the judge says, get the case out, and the state says, oh, all right, so then they tell you, okay, we're going to drop our case. We're going to give you your remedy. And we're even going to pay you your damages. But you can't. In other words, it's an out-of-court settlement, so there's like a gag going on. So the public never gets to see that, and that's what they do. And most people, you know, if they're going to drop the case and pay you money, and you have to keep your mouth shut, the average person just does it. You know what I mean?
But believe me, you're not going to win those cases battling with the language of the man on the land stuff, and I'm sure you're familiar with that. You know, not that they're wrong. But you're not going to win your cases on that, because what that does really is it accepts their authority, and so we're empowering them, even though we're using their stuff, U.S. codes and different things to beat the case, we're still acknowledging their authority. From our perspective, we don't acknowledge any of these authorities. They're frauds, they're crimes, and these people are criminals. And either they got to repent and get on the side of the people and do the right thing, or at some point they're going to go to jail.
But the federal courts, which courts are, it's just the local courts that are against the law in your opinion?
They're all corrupt. The federal courts have moved into a process, an administrative process. They all have moved into an administrative process. And that's why you have to be crystal clear. When we open up a case, we open up an Article III court, okay? And that, you can read our memorandum, and you can use our memorandum and open it up. If you look at our paperwork, we make notes right up in the heading of the case that this is an Article III court, or this is a court of record, and this is the people. We're not corporations. We'll use the word people. And make all the right language. We look to be very careful to make sure we get our jurisdiction, and that they understand due process is at hand, and we expect it to be taken to heart. We're looking for due process. There is not a house that's ever been removed from anyone where the people, where the court system that removed it from them had the authority to do it, so they didn't have the jurisdiction, nor did they give the people the due process, so they seized it illegally. Everyone that's lost a house can get it back.
So how can everybody be that's listening to this call be more involved? What do we need to do to start pushing everything forward?
Well, one of the key things, you know, we're building up membership, okay? We're at a little over 6,400 members at this point. We're building up membership daily. We are filing papers in the court, and they don't like it, and they've tried every way to stop us, but they don't send our papers back because we let the clerks know, you send our papers back, then they're going to be held accountable. This is criminal actions, U.S. codes. There's quite a few codes out there that require the clerk to make no decision at all. They ought to file. As long as it's prima facie, they ought to file. And when it's not prima facie, they got to tell you exactly what the problem is. You didn't put the date over here. You didn't do this. You didn't sign that. You know, something just simple. Okay. Other than that, they have no decision making. So in order for them to send it back, usually they use the clerks to do it, but we let them know you do it, you become part of the crime. And now the clerks aren't sending it back. They're taking our papers. We're still filing right up to this date. And the judge is afraid to send it back, and he better be, because it's a crime. That's 20 years in jail. If that judge takes that paper out, he's guilty of a crime, and he faces up to 20 years in jail. And at some point, he's going to do that 20 years in jail, okay? Maybe not today, but tomorrow. So there's, you know, the fear of the people and the pressure of the people against these people. There's pressure on the other side of the judges to do the wrong thing and support the status quo, and then there's the pressure of the people. When our pressure becomes greater than the other pressure, that's when we'll win. That's one way we can win, okay? And that brings us to... critical mass. Now, the other way we can be empowered is if you read our paper, our book that we wrote for the sheriff, okay, which that's our project. We want to get 20 booklets into the hands of every sheriff in America. When they read that, it's going to be a new day in America. They're going to have an eye-opening, okay? And the sheriffs who don't read it, eventually at some point the sheriffs in the next county over will get talking. They go to meetings from time to time. You know, they have their statewide meetings, the sheriff's association of this state or that state or whatever, and they'll get talking. You didn't read that book? Oh boy, you should go read it. Let me tell you. You see, they need to start getting together and working together and supporting each other. When they go up against a federal agency, they should call the surrounding county sheriffs and say, I got to deal with the feds up here. I need some help. You get four or five sheriffs together and deal with the feds. It'll work. It's already happened. Okay.
I heard it worked.
Matt talks about this.
Well, Northern Indiana, I heard, I don't know, last year that some federal inspector kept bothering a dairy farmer, and the local sheriff finally, you know, told him that, you know, if he came back, he was going to arrest him. I guess that put a stop to the.
That's right. The sheriff, look at. So. A house will never be taken from a person for taxes or foreclosures ever again if the sheriffs come to understand the law. They don't have to get involved in the case. All they have to understand is what a real warrant looks like, because apparently they don't. Every warrant must be very specific on what it is. It must prove the fact that they've had due process in the process, and it must be a sworn affidavit and also a wet ink signature. They can't execute a warrant without that, but they don't know it. IRS will never knock down your door again if the sheriffs come to understand this law, because they need a warrant, and they don't have a lawful warrant. There is no due process here. There is no real crime. There is no, they don't have proof of claim. They don't have fiduciary authority. All these legal things, and the sheriff doesn't have to understand all that. He or she just has to understand one thing, okay? I have to see a sworn affidavit attached to this warrant. I have to see the warrant written with the judge with a wet ink signature. And those two things combined, if they're not there, he can't execute it. And believe me, no federal agent, no state agency, no individual working for the state, none of these people are going to write up a sworn statement or an affidavit on any of that stuff, because they now have to back it up with other things. Like the IRS, they're coming out after you for $100,000 or whatever it is, you know. Well, where's their proof of claim? Their proof of claim is the affidavit that they must file. They can't do it because there's nothing there. There's no due process. They have no proof of claim. They have nothing. Okay.
But typically, if on a mortgage, for example, if the bank is going to sue you first, so then they're going to end up having.
Well, what does the bank have to do with the mortgage? The bank didn't loan you money. When you go through, I guess there are situations where that could be, but generally speaking, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, the government, they went to the Fed window 72 hours after the signature went on to the release of money, not a contract. A release of money from the Fed window is what your signature was all about. It worked off your SESQ accounts, okay? The whole thing is a game. They created this process this way, and then they created the illusion of a contract that doesn't exist. They can't produce it because it doesn't exist. The illusion of a contract that you got to pay this money back, but you're not paying it to the Fed, which is where you should be paying it, but you don't have to because, again, it's SESQ money. Okay, so the bank sent you a bill. The bank the bank collected their money on the closing. They got whoever wrote the loan got their points. The bank gets a point, so many points, for making the loan. Okay, they get the money from the Fed window. They make the exchange, and everything happens. What investment does the bank have? They have nothing. So they come and they send you a bill, and you pay it, and you do this for 20 years, and they charge you 3 times the amount. And then they pay tax on that, and however they whatever a relationship they have with the Fed, it doesn't go back to the Fed. They monetize these all of these things, and they create these shells and tax shelters and everything.
They make money three times off of you.
It just goes on and on and on. But the bank is collecting money they have no right or authority to take because they never put the money out. And then what happens, they claim that they had a big catastrophe, some years back, and they're too big to fail, so you got to bail them out. So they got all these billions of dollars. And then what did they do? They still took the houses away from the people. I mean, they just profit after profit after profit. It doesn't end with these people. They're never happy. And why didn't they give the houses, let the people if they've been paid for this, if the government gave them billions of dollars and reimbursed them, which they're not reimbursing for anything because they have no real investment here, okay? It's just a profit loss because they're not getting their illegal profit. So there's nothing there.
Well, they don't have account with money in it. They make a journal entry. When you go to the bank, because they can leverage a dollar 10 to 1, they didn't have the first dollar that they lent you. It's a journal entry. So then you
and
go.
And it's through the Fed, though.
And you make your payments every month. At the end, let's say you borrow $20,000 for a car, even. So you make your payments. And at the end of the loan, the bank just erases the journal, right? But what they didn't erase is the interest that they charged you on that loan. And that's why our money system goes into debt further and further. Because they're lending money that isn't even printed yet. And they're charging you interest.
Well, lending money on a car, though, is different than lending money on a house. So
I understand, but it's still money that doesn't exist.
Right, it's money that doesn't exist. It's tenfold.
Right, and then they're charging interest. And then at the end of the thing, they erase the journal entry, because that's all it was. There was no money in the vault that they gave you. They made a journal entry. And like you said, then they took your signature and they sold it to some investors. They look at, I got this signature. It's worth $100,000 over 30 years at 6% interest. And so they say, what are you going to give me? Well, I'll give you $50,000. So they make a $50,000 right off the bat off of your signature right there, And so they usually
monetize it. They put in packages. You'll have 100 different foreclosures being sold.
Right, right. So it's
a shell corp.
It's a big scam, and it's gotten worse and worse and deeper and deeper and uglier, and that's why we're in the condition we're in, because we've been dealing in this fiction, this fake money.
And remember, anybody who buys a house through the banks, which goes through Freddie Mac or all of those federal programs, the money comes from the Fed. It doesn't come from the bank that's doing the business. They just get the profit, a few points profit for putting it together and making it work, okay, doing all the paperwork and moving it through. They get these points, so many points on the amount. But the money comes from the Fed, not from the bank. And when the bank collects it, they're not giving the money back to the Fed. That's their profit. But a lot of it flows back to them, eventually all of it ultimately, because you're going to pay three times the amount and the bank's going to be charged fees and they got to pay their taxes.
Well,
however they work all that out, I don't know.
The economy would tank if nobody's paying back their mortgages, I'd say. Huh?
Well, no, not really. You see, this is where the problem is, and this is what the deficit is all about. How many trillion dollars? Have we hit $10 trillion yet or something? You know, that's the problem with the deficit. Look, at this whole thing was arranged with the CESQ accounts, and the people were never to know about it. The few who did know it, and they were able to get some money out of it or be able to get away with having to deal with this situation. But most people don't know. So it was just created really to make more money for the bankers, for the elite, for the people who own this country.
I couldn't believe what I read in your brief there that talked. I had always heard it was a Christmas Eve vote for the income tax amendment, but I couldn't believe there was only three senators or congressmen there to vote on that.
Yeah, it was just a handful, yes. And that's out of history. Yep. That's out of history.
That's just,
look at what's that guy's Congressman McFarlane, Congressman. We've got his paper up there. This was back in I think it was the 30s or the 40s. I think it was the 30s, and his speech on the House floor concerning the destruction of America already back in his day, the total destruction of the economy by the Fed. Okay. Total destruction at that point in time. And, you know, today, you know, the dollar's worth 2 cents maybe. You know, that's about it.
Has the Constitution ever been amended, the part that talked about gold and silver is the only means of exchange? How do we have the dollar?
They can't amend. They can't change that. No, it's never been. There's been no amendments to try to work off of it.
So how did they go off the gold standard? That doesn't make any sense.
You see, in order to have the change of a body of the Constitution, there's a harmony of power that has to be considered that has not been considered. Number one, number two, they have to have a full constitutional convention. You can't change the body. The body is fixed. And now, I guess it could be changed in a full constitutional convention. But that's really, really involved, and I don't know how far they'll be able to get. The other thing, and Schultz makes this pretty powerful argument, Robert Schultz for We the People, He's made this in the court, that at a constitutional convention, it's got to be the people. It cannot be elected individuals. It's got to be the people because it's we the people, not we the government, not we the servants, not we the elected officials. It's we the people. So there's another problem. Now,
so the argument
the
17th for the dollar,
Amendment. Yeah.
So the dollar is considered a note of debt, basically. Yeah, it is unconstitutional.
There's no constitutional power to make a dollar. There's no constitutional power to make a coin that's not gold or silver. Only gold or silver.
Nixon is pretty recent history. He was the one that took us off the gold standard, right?
But the battle was going on back in Kennedy's day and before, and Kennedy is the one that tried to fix the problem by putting the silver certificate onto the market.
And then what, Roosevelt in 1933 was the one that actually...
Well, he's the one who took all the gold and silver from the people. Yeah, he robbed the people put it in Fort Knox, and then it's not even there anymore.
My dad was born in 1933, so, you know, my granddad, I just cannot believe that generation owning guns put up with that. Who would turn in their gold?
They didn't know.
Country?
All
That's
this was secret. You know, who was it? I don't remember who it was. Could it have been Kennedy? I don't remember. But someone said if the people really understood what the Fed was doing and what's really going on, there would be an uprising tomorrow. Okay, now we're so full of fluoride and so docile and so ignorant and so dumb and we're tweeters and we don't read and we don't know nothing. We don't know any of our rights. We don't even know what the First, Second Amendment is or the Fifth Amendment, which is some of the most powerful ones. They don't even know what that is, and they're willing to negotiate it away or let others negotiate away from them. And that's why we're a dying country. We're a dying nation.
Yeah.
If the people expect to be ignorant and free, Otherwise, forget about it. It's not going to happen.
Okay, he should read The Creature from Jekyll Island. That would explain a lot for him.
Well, our civics course will tell it all.
That's true, too, yeah.
Have you taken our civics course? Have you started our civics course?
Not yet.
Well, that civics course is powerful, okay? You want to really understand how we got to where we are today, you take our civics course. If you really want to know American history, you take our civics course. If you want to know what common law is, you take our civics course, okay?
Yeah.
And we even touch a lot on the Constitution. We have Michael Barnarek's lectures and his course in there. His course was done on YouTube. We've got that in there. And we also got some other lectures that he has given on the different amendments. And so it's 120 hours of video and audio.
Yeah.
And we ask very simple questions, you know, just to make sure people are taking it and moving forward. Because it's a requirement for anyone that wants to become an administrator, they got to take those courses.
Right. Speaking of moving forward, I think we got three people.
Yeah, this was a good conversation.
Well, I appreciate you guys. You guys are doing an excellent job. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks for the call.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to go to the next one, and that looks like Terry from New Jersey.
Yeah, hi, Gerard. This is Terry.
Hey,
I was just wondering. Good. I was just wondering. I'm sure you probably heard about it. Is that homeless veteran that came to the aid of a lady whose car was stranded? And you know, I was wondering because he raised like $400,000. Has the NLA? I'm sure they probably have, but I haven't heard it discussed with regard to a GoFundMe.
What state was this issue in?
New Jersey.
New Jersey? Okay.
Yeah, so he got a lot of social media and raised like $400,000 for this guy. That was more than my insurance settlement when I got hit by a truck. And, you know, it's just amazing because, you know, here in L.A. is trying to save the country. And this guy just saved one person with a gallon of gas for $20.
Right.
So, you know, I just thought I'd bring that up. I don't know if you thought about it, but it might be an idea.
Well, you know, again, you know, we've been working with the Widow's Mite. We're not sure exactly. None of us are schooled in how to really, you know, make money in this way, you know. And we just ask people for money. They either give it or they don't. Look, we do know that there are people on our call or in our group and paying some attention that have money. They have deep pockets, and hopefully one day they'll believe enough in us that they'll reach into their deep pockets and give us something to really make us go forward. I want to tell you something. America, the face of America will change in 6 months if we can get the necessary funding we need to get the Sheriff's Project completely off the ground, where we're looking to purchase a little over about 80,000 booklets, 20 booklets to every sheriff in America, and there'll be like 20 or 25,000 additional booklets left over. So those sheriffs who need more because they have a bigger sheriff's department for the deputies will get it to them. But if we can get that project off the ground and accomplished in a couple of months, that would require some people, either require every one of our members to put $10 in a piece, $5 a month for 2 months or something, or whatever they can afford. But if every one of our members gave $10 a piece on an average, the project would be over. We'd accomplish it, and we'd be buying the books this month, all of them, and we'd have the money to ship them out. Or if a few people that have deep pockets give a few big amounts to us, then we'd be able to make the purchase of the books and get it done. And once the sheriff, we wrote the book and we asked the opinion of anybody. Read the first, just read the first five pages, okay? And I think you'll agree that any sheriff who reads the first few pages, they're just going to be drawn into this book because it's going to, just those pages alone will empower them so much and interest and pique their interest so much that they will dig deep into this book. And if they dig deep into this book, and start to exercise little by little. They'll build a backbone to be able to exercise it, and then they'll start to use their authority. Once they start to do that across America, game over. That will win America right there. That will spearhead us right into the courts. We, the people, will take back the judiciary and the control of the judicial system, and we will make sure we have well, fully informed jurists, and the sheriffs will make sure that warrants are lawful. And with those two things alone, it's just done. America belongs to the people again. You know, all the problems could be settled right there and then. And it could be done on grassroots, because look at, even though we have a unified United States common law grand jury, we have no intentions of maintaining such a jury. This is only for the sole purpose to deal with subversion, both by enemies foreign and domestic, in every state of the union. It's an issue in all 50 states. So once we accomplish the goal and get in and start moving it, cases will be really be taking places inside of the different counties, and the people will have total control, and we will do the best we can to train these people on how to be administrators. We're also writing a book on for the administrators. So, and it's a full-time job for an administrator. It's a professional position. Anybody who wants it. And we need 4 people in every county. And you know, remember, they control it right now, and they get money from the comptroller. Every county gets so much money from the comptroller to run the what's necessary to draw in the grand juries and the trial juries. That money will then go to the people, separated from the government, separated from the political process, that has one intention in mind, and that is to enforce the Constitution and train the people coming in of the Constitution. We also will push forward a plan to really educate our children. We need to get our education young in the children. They need to learn the Constitution. They need to learn civics. They need to learn a lot of this stuff, and so we need to bring the education into the people on a grassroots level. We also are looking to bring back the committee man through the committees of safety, to bring it back to the people, away from the top-down structure of the political process, and bring it back into the grassroots level. And once that happens and we get the committee men working with us through the committees of safety, who will morph back into the committee men, get them working with us, they will go out. Because then they'll be really helping, looking for people who really are constitutional people. If they haven't taken a course and they want to run for office, they shouldn't be supported by any committeemen. They should not be walking their papers and getting the signatures or doing any of those things to get them onto the ballot. What they should be doing is saying, well, you don't know the Constitution. Go here to take that course, and you come back and you talk to us then. Now we'll get people, you know, who are educated, who are now going to run for office. And the committee men will only support those people who are constitutionalists, people who are real, statesmen, not politicians. And at the same time, the committee men, since they go out into the neighborhood, into the districts, and they talk to the people, they have the opportunity to bring the jurist handbooks out to the people and get them educated at least a little bit through a handbook, and also get them to our website, which will educate them on the true political process, the purposes of the offices, what the powers and the authorities are of all of these offices, and, you know, who appoints who, and, you know, what elected position appoints what authorities. Who's responsible for the commissioner who did this or did that? You got to go after the political animal, the guy who was elected, and that's the guy who's got to, you got to go chase. We need to train the people in all those things, and it's simple. You know, when people go to, pull that lever on that ballot machine, they need to understand what the office is that, what's the power and the authority we're given? What is it that that office does that that person is running for? They need to know what that is, because I don't know about what it is in most cases. I don't know their powers and their authorities, what they need to be doing, what they shouldn't be doing. We need to get this out onto our website. Any office, people should be able to click a button and see what the powers and authorities these people got. Then they need to know these people, write a 500-word essay, and as long as they've done their constitutional test, we let it come onto the website. And people now can read a 500-word essay, by the people running for this office or that office. They can understand what powers and authorities is being given to these people. And then they also, can click on in their essay, their website, to get more information about that person. But we have to make it a constitutional thing. We have to make it a re-education of America, of the people. And that's how we will not only save America, we will keep America safe from that point forward, as long as we do not go back to ignorance.
I have one more thought. How about selling your sheriff's handbook on eBay and Amazon? I know you don't probably, most people don't want to put any more money in Jeff Bezos' pocket, but he had the tools that, you could promote your book.
We will put them up for sale for the general public, and we'll also put the Jurist Hand books up for sale for the general public, and we'll give a very reasonable rate, and that'll, of course, generate more income and push the project more. But to where it has to be given free, it's got to be given free. And anybody can get a copy of this booklet if they don't, as long as they don't, a pocket handbook is one thing. It's very handy. You stick it in your pocket, it's nice. But you can still get a full copy online for free. You can click on Get the PDF Copy, which is up there right now.
Well, there's a lot of good stuff on Amazon, eBay, by a lot of good authors. And I think that, once people start reading that book and they start reading the reviews, I think it's going to start selling like hotcakes.
Well, we will push it there as much as we can. But bear in mind, the true work and what's really going to stick is the grassroots work. And we can't, that's where we really got to work. And therefore, once we get grassroots, the people on the grassroots controlling the process, the judicial process, by controlling, the orientation and the choosing of the grand jury and the trial juries, okay, and we get the committees of safety working with the sheriff and then local governments, and then it's then morphing right into the committee men. A lot of people who are committee men will become learned in what we're doing, and they will join us. The people who have been, really making money out of this thing and becoming powerful, they'll disappear because they won't be able to use their power no more. And the grassroots will take control, and then it's an educational thing. It's up to the people in the grassroots to push it into the local schools on the grammar school level and the high school level, and to also push this into the people when they knock on their doors to hand out these things. And we will sell, of course it's got to be sold, but we can't afford, but again, the courts will pay for this. This comes from how the money is gotten and everything. We're laying that all out in the handbook. But there is money that the state has to give in, to support a website, to support the collection of the juries, the grand juries. Also, to support the committee man process to some degree, and so it could be very cheap if every county is putting in, $50 a month, $100 a month, which is coming from the state anyway, to support a place where people can become educated, like we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance, to educate the people, to inform, to facilitate that education, to facilitate informing the people, a place where they can come together and communicate and organize, and a website that will deal with every election across America. This will all take money. Also, every administration would need to have hundreds or thousands of jurist books. And again, that would generate more income for National Liberty Alliance to continue to really, build this website up to where it really needs to be, very sophisticated level, politically and judicially, because that's where the powers are in the political and judicial realms, and give it to the people. The people, look it, we have government through or by consent of the people. That's the Declaration of Independence. And the consent of the people is in the judiciary and the political realms. More in the judiciary than anything else, because the judiciary can indict. You see, we can get rid of all these criminals that are breaking their oath, that are in bad behavior. If Congress doesn't want to go and get rid of these people, then the people will. Because they're not doing their job. You know, these people should be thrown out of office for being in bad behavior.
One last thought. I have a seller account, and I could start selling your handbook tomorrow if you wanted me to. So just keep that in mind.
Get a hold of Jan.
Okay.
And give him the information. When we get the books to finally published, because we have to purchase them, it's good. Look at the books themselves are going to cost us, I forget the numbers, maybe $40,000 to purchase the 80,000 books we need, and get them delivered and ready to go back out. They're probably going to end up maybe about 30 cents, 35, maybe 40 cents a piece. They're going to be pretty thick books, but it's going to be so packed, and it'll still fit in the pocket. But it's going to have the Constitution in there. It's going to have the Declaration of Independence. It's going to have some Founding Father quotes in there. It's going to have the real law. It's going to have, of course, the Bill of Rights in there, the Declaration of Independence, and then a whole bunch of, you know, layouts of the process and what getting into details of what sheriffs really need to know. Again, read the book. Anybody who hasn't read it should read it. You know.
There's both the
book today.
I
had to be careful.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Well, I just lost my train of thought there, but I was going to say, what was it? All right. Well, I yield.
Right. Thanks for the call. Appreciate
no problem.
Terry.
Thank you, Terry.
Stuck under voltage.
And I think it's a good idea to sell them because that will help make them go viral. I mean, I don't care if you got $4 a book until we get them out at down to that whatever it is.
Oh, here's what I was going to say. Here's what I was going to say is that, you know, once you get them up online, then people can write reviews of your book. And you got 6,000 members. You get people, you know, the membership of the NLA reviewing this book, and that's going to create its own buzz.
And you always see other authors with books, and even Brent, I believe, in one place there'll be so many dollars, in another place there'll be a different amount. And it all depends on what it's, you know, what it's costing to have them there. And people, you know, if it gets popular, they'll shop, they'll find us, and they'll buy them from us. But this is a good way to get them off the ground, I agree.
Well, I agree, and I think you're right. We could probably charge $4 or maybe $5 a book delivered, you know,
right.
Postage and everything. So we could probably do that. You know, what we were doing also is we were selling them when we were doing the Juristan books, we were selling them packages of 100, okay? And I forget what we were selling them for, $40 or something, I forget, for 100 booklets. That was delivered. Maybe it was 45 or 48, but it was a delivered price. You know, went anywhere we went. We shipped them out, 100 per box. And we also sold, sometimes people would buy 200 or 500. We had some people who bought 1,000. And that did generate a lot of money to support what we were doing. We did kind of put it right back into NLA. Everything that comes into NLA goes into NLA. We should have been, well, we couldn't afford it at the time to be wise enough to really retain some of that money to buy more books and so on. We just never got to that point because we just were keeping afloat, you know. This thing was really supported by just one or two people for many, many years, and now we need, the overhead is big, and we got to pay the bills, you know.
Okay, I yield. Thanks.
Thank you, Terry. Okay.
And we do survive on, you know, just a few thousand a month, and we do, you know, everything is you know, in-house, and, you know, we survive off the widow's mite, ultimately, you know. Wish we had some rich people who would really help us, but we've been so, and maybe that's the way it's going to be. It's just going to be the widow's mite, you know, $5 here, $10 here.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, John. Next caller is open. I have no idea who it is. It's 847.
Hello. I'm Vince Kay from Northern Illinois.
Okay.
John, I'm a recent subscriber, $10 a month. Very happy to give to this cause. It's a cause I've sought and really believe in. and am anxious to get involved. I'm starting the process. I'm continuing my educational process with taking the Church Dictionary course, which I started about 3 weeks ago. And after finishing that, I want to go through the four steps, I think, that's on your website, going right from there to the constitutional course. But my question tonight regards NLA's involvement potentially. Is there anything being done or any position of the NLA on the chemtrails phenomenon that we're experiencing? Boy, the last 4 days or so, just walking around, these trails seem to be just multiplying out of control, much more than I've even seen in the past.
It's in our master case. We did. I do believe we mentioned the chemtrails.
Yeah, I think we did bring it up.
And we have
spent a lot of time on it.
We put some evidence in there, but we put it in there so we can talk about it. In other words, if you put it in the case, you can always expound upon it later on.
Yeah, we need to bring the look at people. There's people out there who've done research on this, and so that we don't need to recreate the wheel. We just got to get their research. You know.
There's so much, John, and there's even more recent stuff recently.
And also, the president has made a move on this. Didn't he shut him down? But there's a bureaucracy.
What I've discovered, because I've been watching the updates on the videos. Some of the people that were really up on it have updated their stuff, and the one guy says, they have no intentions of ever stopping it because they need it for the G5 Internet of Things. They want to build this big eye in the sky. That's that video I sent you, John. You should watch that. Mm-hmm. It's only a half hour. It's pretty scary where they're going with this technology. This internet, this house that talks to you and all this other stuff, you know, they're working on integrating us into the technology, implanting chips in us. And this whole chemtrail thing is, in order for it to have wireless internet and be able to track everybody and know what they're buying and know what they're doing, and for the thing to work, they need a big eye in the sky. Well, that chemtrail, that ionizing the sky and turning it into this big lens, this battery that they can bounce stuff off of, and they can see you and they can track you and they can talk to you, and their Internet of Things to work, they need that stuff up in the sky to work off of. And that's why no president can ever get rid of it, because it's worldwide. These groups that are doing this, they are the elite. They have this dream, and this is what they're implementing. So really, it's something that we the people have to push ourselves, you know.
Well, amen. And once we get in, we will push it. There's a lot of issues we'd love to push.
It's,
you know,
way too big for Donald Trump to do on his own.
Yeah, I think so.
Way too big.
It's international.
It's international, and it represents the next step of where they want to bring us to, which is trillions and trillions of dollars for these people, and it's all about control. And it's also about the eugenics of making us die earlier and cutting the population down to 500 million and all these other crazy ideas they have. It all integrates together. It's amazing the diabolical plan that this is. And, you know, you say, how could they plan all this stuff, and it all integrates and it all fits together? And this is one guy over here and it's another guy 1,000 miles away, because it's the devil's plan. And he's keeping it together, because I don't think men can cooperate that well. I mean, they got this agenda and they've been marching forward. And you know what? It's all in the movies. They tell us what they're going to do to us, and then they do it. Look, we have Raytheon. We have Skynet. These are all things that were in Terminator and all these things. They're reality now. They're actual reality. And so they want to interface computers into your brain. And that they want. It's called transhumanism, because that's the devil's plan, is to recreate creation to his own image and likeness. And that's what's going on. And this is a really horrible thing. Now, you're seeing a lot of chemtrails, but the other thing is sometimes you don't see them at all. I don't know if you've had any clear days. I noticed here back a couple of months ago, I couldn't believe how clear the skies were. Now, I don't know if they were out of money. I don't know if Donald Trump threw a monkey wrench into them in the Northeast here. But
yeah, I noticed
they had stopped. and they're back at it again now, but not as bad as they were. Now, what area are you in, Vince? You're in Ohio?
Here in the Chicagoland area.
I don't know why they're
pretty visible.
Yeah, and I don't know why they're doing it. I mean, I'm telling you, sometimes even over here, and I'm in the country, they got a regular patchwork quilt of chemtrails. Now, as of late, I don't see it as much, so I don't know.
Well, the number of people participate.
Those chemtrails have multiple uses, too. It's not, I mean, the big use is for this Internet of Things, this big eye in the sky to watch everybody. But the military uses it for many, you know, they have forward-looking radar, and the fact that they can blanket the sky with this metal, it makes the forward-looking radar, when they're flying the plane, it gives it something to bounce off. It makes it very much sharper. You know, there's lots of different things that they do. They use it to control the weather. They use it to make it rain. They use it to make it not rain. It's just amazing all the garbage that they're doing. And meanwhile, they're killing the Earth and they're killing people. Ultimately, you know, they got this stupid vision, but by the time they get done doing what they're doing, the Earth isn't going to support life. I mean, that's how diabolical this is. You know?
The point that the NLA makes so well, you know, constitutionally, the consent of the people, going back to that, this is being done, poisoning us. We're breeding this stuff. I don't know about you folks, but I really sense a difference in the air. I sense a scratchiness and kind of a bitterness in my throat. And
it's worse than
passages
that.
That's going on.
I don't want to scare you, but guess what? Those particles that they're putting in, those nanoparticles, they can control them through electric. They're designed to get together in your body when they put the right frequency on them. And make little nanobots in your body. God only knows what they're going to do with them. But they have people, you know, Morgellons is that stuff coming out of your skin, those little fibers, those little synthetic fibers that people get coming out of their skin. That's all out of the chemtrails, and it's all part of this Internet of Things that they're doing to us. So
there's a guy named
Ken Rolla. We could take all this down. Once the people take control of the judicial process, the judiciary, and take back control of the political process, then we can stop all of it. And we can, you look at, there's a lot of big cases we need to go after, and I think there's going to be a lot of big cases just coming up anyway with what's going on in the political realms, just with what, you know, President Trump has really, you know, kind of trumped up and brought together since he's been elected, and it looks like he's been playing them for quite some time. You know, this whole Russia thing, he was feeding into this, it looks like, for them to continue to go where they went to, because they ultimately, the enemy was not going to survive this, and now we're seeing the truth come out. So I think we're going to start to see a lot of things coming up, cases against some big name people. It looks that way. Judgment Day, I think, for them is coming. And if it comes for those people, it's going to move down into the, well, you know, we plan on going in dealing with these judges. They better get on board and start doing the right thing and making good decisions now and repent. And look, if they start working with the people, we're willing to forget their sins because we need to save the nation. If we're going to put all the people that are criminals in jail, there'll be no one in the courts. There'll be no one in Washington, D.C. There'll be no one in the capitals of any state because they're all guilty. They're all guilty. They're all playing the game. There'd be very few people who would escape justice, you know, a Ron Paul, you know. But look, if they start working with the people, at some point they'll jump ship because they'll realize the ship is sinking, and if they work with the people, that's fine. But look at whoever they injured. If they injured anyone, especially judges, you know, they're still going to have to pay that toll. We can't prevent that from happening. For every injury, there must be a remedy. So we, the people, you know, collectively cannot prevent that from happening. But we need to save the nation at all costs. We need to come with an olive branch. We need to come with mercy and not coming out vengefully. Our focus is to save the nation and to turn the tide. And I think we can do it. I believe we're going to do it. I also think at this point in time in my thinking, for everything I understand, I think before God judges this entire world, where everyone has to be judged individually, before that happens, I think the evil of this world is going to be judged by the people. I think that that really is going to happen. I see a lot of evidence in the Bible from the way I look at and see things that that could happen. So judgment of the political realms will be judged, maybe, before, you know, God judges the world. But if not, I'm good with that, too.
Nations can only be judged in real time, not in eternity. So now is the time for the nations to be judged. And sometimes the judgment is a punishment. That's the scary part. But look, you got to have good judges.
Well, look, if we get our way and get into the courts, these people will be judged, won't they?
Well, this
will move to other countries, too. There are a lot of countries that have tapped into what we're doing and want to get on board.
This is a worldwide issue. It's affecting everybody. And America is still that light in the world for now. And that's why we have to move now. We have a period of time when we can save that. But if you want to put the likes of, look at Bill Gates needs to go to jail. Bill Gates has participated in genocide. He continues to. And he's an evil man. And he's caused a lot of problems. And in order to put the likes of Bill Gates in jail, you got to have an honest judge, because Bill Gates got more money than God at this point. I mean, not that God has any money, but you know what I mean. He's so rich and so powerful, it's going to be hard to take a guy like him down. But these are the guys that are at the zenith of this thing. People like Bill Gates and these people that are running this technology. And they know what they're doing. I mean, he knows what he's doing, him and his wife. I mean, he has to know. You know, he's putting stuff in vaccinations and in mosquitoes to control the population and sterilize people and kill people. And he knows exactly what he's doing. But he thinks he's a god. He's a billionaire, so he gets away with it. So anyway, I think that's the point, that we need to fix the judges, because if you're going to take now these big powerful people, you need real judges, real people to judge them.
Yeah, they can only get away with this if they control the courts. And
right.
So because they're getting away with it, it tells us who controls the courts.
Exactly.
Once we turn that around, look at, you know, Rothschild said that, you know, let me control the money of a nation and I don't care who makes the law. Well, he failed to tell us some big secret that he had. He also had to control the judges. Okay, now, it's true, he uses money to control the judges. He bribes them, or he really blackmails them. They get set up, and then they're blackmailed, and then they own them, and that's that. So, but we have to win back the courts. And once we do that, game over. The people will take charge, and we'll be able to do what has to be done.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Anything else, Vince, before we move on to...
Sir, thank you very much.
California Fred. I think that's California Fred. Okay, I'll bring in California. I think it's supposed to say Fred after that. Oh, no, I'm sorry. You're coming up next, I guess.
You this is Florida.
Florida.
This is
Boy,
Florida.
I jumped right across the nation there. Who's this?
This is Felicia.
How you doing, Felicia?
All right. I just want to say, first off, I'm not going to be long. You guys are some smart guys. You're some brilliant, brilliant guys. But I was listening and to Mr. John. I know about what Judge Kahn did, and you were saying that we don't have to, it doesn't cost anything to move it into federal court.
Well, we're already in federal court with him. We've already indicted him. We've also sent him a show cause, and now it's time to push on the magistrate. Goodness, Jan, are you here? Do you remember? Well, Gerard, maybe you remember the name of the magistrate on this case?
Oh, boy.
Conley, I think it is. Isn't it Conley?
Stewart? Was it Stewart?
I think it's Conley, but maybe it was. Anyway, we got to go after that guy and put the pressure on him. But you see, look at... It doesn't matter what they do. It doesn't matter what they say, because they can only push their... What they're trying to do, they can only go so far. They're not preventing us from getting the... They're trying to prevent us from putting papers in the court, but they have not succeeded at that yet. We're still filing, and they're still taking them. I don't think that they have the guts to send them back, because that's their death warrant for them. I mean, at that point, that's 20 years in jail. And if a clerk is enticed to do that, the clerk is facing 2 years in jail, okay? But the judge is facing 20 years in jail. And so that's why the paperwork's still going. He sends us occasionally these threatening letters and, you know, his basement thrown down, big caps and all that stuff, you know. But look at, he's a criminal. He's in bad behavior. He's no longer a judge. Even though he's there, he's not really a judge no more. And again, he's been indicted, and we're still filing papers, and that is pressure. The more papers we file, the more pressure upon them. The more people involved, the more pressure upon them. Eventually, our pressure will overwhelm the pressure, generally speaking, of these judges from the other side. You know, the ones that are really guilty of serious problems that are being controlled, maybe pedophiles, because there's a lot of pedophile rings that are controlling these judges and a lot of these elected individuals. Those people may never come this way. But the ones that aren't hooked up into that, at some point, the pressure's going to be so great they're going to flip the other way, and that's when they're going to fall. So again, it's going to require more pressure, more paper, but key is people. We need to get that critical mass. And again, the critical mass can come through the Sheriff's Project. The critical mass can come through the project, through our informing and working with the president. It could come through Jeff Sessions. We've asked him for, you know, U.S. attorneys to prosecute our cases. And it could be that, you know, Jeff Sessions, there might be a plan going on here. So I don't know that we want to be too harsh on Jeff Sessions at this point. I was pretty hard on him, but I'm beginning to see and hear things that maybe this whole thing with him being very docile, very quiet, very not too connected with what's going on and ignoring things is all part of a plan, it seems. And it seems to be coming together. Now, I could be wrong on that, but I don't think I am. And so we'll wait it out a little while for Jeff Sessions before we send him a show cause and see what happens with him. But if there are the 900 to 2,500 indictments that have been sealed, that have been being worked on the past year, Jeff Sessions has been a pretty busy guy then, if that is the case. And we're talking about big people, talking about judges. We're talking about a lot of elected individuals, appointed individuals, people in high power positions that have been indicted. And it hasn't been revealed yet. So, again, I believe, you know, if that's true, and it seems to be a lot of evidence to strongly suggest that it probably is, if that is true, things are going to blow up soon. And we're going to be in the middle of that. We, the people, through what we're doing, is going to be in the middle of that whole thing. And we'll be the ones to bring America back from the grassroots and bring it back to one course where it needs to be under the common law.
Yes, sir. I do need to do a new affidavit of what happened since the first documents that were filed for Judge Kahn actually dismissing it, because a lot has changed. And I'm going to get off the phone now,
well,
but
Kahn,
I don't know.
Judge Kahn didn't dismiss anything.
Well, okay. He threw it out?
No. He may have said certain things, and he's written some letters, but he hasn't done anything. Our paper's still going into the courts. It's still being filed. The case is still open. Pressure is on. We intend on every one of these affidavits, every one of these habeas corpuses, every one of these non-judicial foreclosures, every one of these papers that we file to put all Congress on notice, to put all of these judges on notices, all of these indictments that we've done, all of that will come to a point in time where judgment will be applied on all these issues, every single one of them. So again, you know, we know some people, you know, are anxious to get it done. They'd like to see things go faster. Maybe some people thought that things were going to happen quicker. We tried to tell people it's going to take time. But look, it's going to happen. And those people who've lost their homes, they're going to be compensated for that because the law requires it. And let me tell you, there's plenty of money out there, really, in these different funds that they have. What do they call them programs, the towns, the cities, Gerard? They have all this money.
The Capital Reserve, CAFR funds.
CAFR funds, yes.
And that's just a pimple, John.
that's just the beginning. That's just the tip of the iceberg.
It's trillions of dollars, however.
Oh, yeah. So, I'm happy with just getting our nation back and on course. You know? You know, they owe the people so much. They have damaged we the people over the past 50 plus years and even longer, 100 years. They've damaged the people so much. They've robbed us so much. They've robbed us of our future, our retirement, our peace, our tranquility. They just don't stop. They could never, ever really pay us all back. But again, I want to get something for our posterity if the world's going to continue, you know, if God's going to continue things for a while. Who knows? We may be coming to Judgment Day pretty quick. I mean, a lot of people seem to believe that. I
do
lean on that too. So, but you look at, we need to bring things back to the where it belongs, because we have a duty to do that anyway. God requires of us to do the right thing, and if we're involved in this, we need to be doing the right thing. And that's what we're doing.
I know. So, and one more thing, I heard you talking about the vaccinations. Bill Gates was charged, I think it was India, of crimes against humanity for vaccinating people, and he got away with it.
No kidding. I didn't hear about that. Did you hear about that, Gerard?
Absolutely, yes.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
And he's a wanted man. Did you say he got away with it?
Yeah, he's still walking around.
Well, they got a warrant for his arrest. They didn't drop the charges.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Believe me, I don't think he's going to be flying or walking over there too soon.
Yeah, he's not going to India, huh?
Yeah, I don't think so. But, you know, I mean, look at and they claim the same thing with George Bush, that I had heard that they have an order to arrest him if he leaves the country. A lot of these other countries want these people, and they don't care. They're brave enough to do it, you know what I mean? Because apparently, you know, they don't have the influence over those countries. Their influence is all here, all the people that they've bribed and gotten goods on. So right now,
they're
kind of
stuck
here.
And I think China and Russia is working with Trump. I don't think any of them want this New World Order.
No, I think they're tired of it, and it's about time, you know. So,
has anyone ever read The Protocols of Zion?
I've heard. I might have. I've read so much stuff, but I know that title. I don't remember exactly what it was about, but
because it's sure. Almost like it's going like in line. Everything that's going on is going in line. It's like happening.
Well, they always tell us what they're going to do before they do it, and they do it in many ways, not the least of which is in the movies. I don't know if they have to tell us, or if they're just that proud that they can't help themselves, you know.
I think they have to tell us.
And I think they do have to tell us because, you know, when you ask
people are stupid
directly. Oh yeah, well that's true. But more people are awake now than ever before, and more people are waking up on a daily basis, and that's what their biggest fear is. Their fear is that enough people wake up and to what they're doing and that critical mass John talks about happens. That's what they fear because you know. Look, they use a lot of mind control through the TV sets and through the education system. I mean, we've lost a couple of generations of children. They believe that gender is in your head, you know what I mean? It has to do with what you think it is. And all this baloney, they fed them through the school system. They basically, they don't believe in God, these kids, and they've been taught this in school. So, you know, and all the baloney that's on those TV sets. I mean, you can't watch television anymore. Because
I don't.
They'll brainwash you, and you don't even realize they're doing it. Because it's a passive, you know, you sit there, and you go into this alpha brainwave thing that's semi-hypnotic, and they throw thoughts in there, and you don't even realize they're going in. But if you're hearing them, they're going in. And then when that subject comes up, guess what your brain pulls up? Your brain pulls up with what it last heard on the TV, and your mind doesn't have the ability because you store things in images in your brain. So if they put a thought in your head on a certain subject, and then that subject comes up later, and you say, oh, I know all about that because you have this image that they put in your head, But your brain can't say, well, no, that's a television image. You really didn't learn anything. You didn't read a book. You didn't verify anything. So they're downloading stuff into your brain, and your brain doesn't have the ability to tell the real information from the fake information. So it's very, very dangerous. And I certainly wouldn't use it to babysit my kids because they start... Look, you got kids, they're a year old, and they're staring at the TV set. You think that stuff isn't going in there? It's really bad.
They're playing the computer games. They're tweeting, and nobody's reading a book.
Right.
Nobody's learning anything about, justice, honor. They're not learning about God. They're not learning about the Constitution. They're not learning about the common law. They're not learning about liberty. They're not learning about any of the right things, And, I truly believe if you read Isaiah very carefully, especially when you get around chapters, 18, 19, 20, 21, and all the way through, really, 28, 26, 28, 30, you read those chapters very carefully, it appears that, that there's going to be judgment upon nations before God judges the world. And could be what we're doing is going to bring that to pass. Look at what did we do with the Declaration of Independence? We made a covenant with God. We called upon Him and to receive and accept our unalienable rights, and they're gifted from God. We make that clear in the Constitution and in the Declaration of Independence, and we call upon His law. Consent of the people, and we created a constitution which extends our relationship with God and our control over our government, we the people. And so, if you look into common law, who is the king of the court? The king of the court is God. It's His law. He writes the law. It's the law of the heart. Everybody knows it. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not steal. And for every injury, there must be a remedy. People have to be paid back, fourfold or fivefold, whatever it is. And so you put this all together. So where's judgment going to take place? If God is going to do the judgment, He could be doing it right in the courts, or He could just take total control and point this angry finger down at this earth and just annihilate it, we know how all that's going to work out. I know I've read the end of the book, so I know exactly how it's going to end up. But how it's going to happen, it's difficult to really see. But what we're doing is the right thing, no matter what.
I know. Okay, I stand mute. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If everybody wants to watch a really compelling video, it's 23 minutes and 56 seconds. It's on YouTube, and it's called "Most People Don't Even Realize What's Coming." Watch that. There's more information of what they're doing and what they're planning in 23 minutes than I've seen in a long time. It's a very powerful video, and it'll scare the bejeebers out of you. Anyway.
Often wondered what a bejeeber is.
Hey, can you guys hear me okay?
I can. How you doing, Fred?
Well, pretty good, gentlemen. I had a couple questions that have been bothering me of late. The United Nations has its charter. I'm wondering why that charter can't be brought into compliance with our Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Either that or back out of that shithole operation and do something else.
It's all unconstitutional. We got to back out.
Look, Donald Trump has already told them that we're not funding them anymore.
He's just cutting some money. He's still staying in it. In fact, he's using it against North Korea. It's part of a shill game. But the next question I got is...
Well, bear in mind, he's got to play in the sandbox. Even we, when we go into court, we play in the sandbox. I use their statutes against them. Because they can be applied that way. And whatever is in power and authority at the moment, and whatever people think it is, you got to deal with it somehow, and I can see him using it. But go ahead.
Okay, the next issue I have is national security. I am so filled up. I mean, I'm at crush depth with national security. Anything you look at, touch, talk about is somehow classified. Now, granted, I can understand why... Some some jet fighter should have classification, top secret, secret, or whatever. But for everything to be classified, it's time to start looking at people in a different light.
Well, I think the president is helping on that one by giving Trey Gowdy the security clearance, the ultimate security clearance, the highest security clearance. So he can look into anything now, anything
great,
that they're dealing with.
Now, Trey Gowdy can sit there and look at it, and then Trey Gowdy can sit there and be a clam because he can't talk about it. I'm asking you about...
Well, not so.
John, the grand jury. How can they have a security clearance for the grand jury? How can the grand jury circumvent this security machine they have?
Because Trey Gowdy has to assemble a grand jury, and they don't need a security clearance. Once he's assembled them as a special whatever, then it's done. The grand jury asks for evidence. They have to give it to him.
But look, if he sees that they're abusing the secrecy, you know, this secured papers because it's supposed to be top secret, and they're doing it to cover up criminal activities, Trey Gowdy has all of the authority and power and ability to bring it out. And I believe he will, because look, he does have a good background, even though he's a lawyer, but he does pretty damn good. But look, we're going to go after the criminals. They're doing a lot of criminal things. We can catch them on, and they're going to go to jail. Once the grand juries take control, we're going to go after all of these people. And you know, it's not the unified United States common law grand jury that's going to do it. It's going to be grand juries in counties across America that's going to do it. Because that's where it has to be done, on the grassroots level. We just have to get the spark going. We got to get the foot into the court and really get it moving. And once we get it moving, it's up to the people on the grassroots level to deal with this. But we have to open the floodgates to get the people into the process on the county level, the judicial process. Our plan. It'll happen. It'll take place as long as we get in. It'll happen.
We're back to the same point, though. How do you become... classified or have a security clearance by being on a grand jury?
Hold it. You don't need... Look, if they are using security, you know, top secret, closing up paper...
We know they're using it.
Yes, but if Trey Gowdy or anyone gets in there and sees that they're using it, they're abusing it, he can reveal that. He could talk about that. He could bring it into Congress. That's not the point.
Yes,
here's the point. These people are doing criminal activities everywhere, in the open, that we know about. And once we go after them, they'll be eliminated. That whole system will collapse.
Who owns the security clearance of the document? Think about that, okay? Is it Department of Justice? Is it the FBI? Is it Homeland Security? Is it the Army?
It's out of control.
News for you. The grand jury is above all of them, Fred.
What I'm getting at is the security. Whoever classified that instrument is the one that's claiming it's secure.
But here's what you're missing, Fred.
I'm not missing the damn thing. You are.
Let me tell you what you're missing from what we're doing, okay? We are dealing with that. Look, we don't have to go after Agenda 21 to shut it down. We just got to free the people to take control of the courts, and it will shut down on its own because, first of all, everything they're doing is unconstitutional. Now, all of these people that are in control of this, okay, the Clintons there's just a huge number of people, a lot of judges, a lot of political figures, a lot of people like Gates, the filthy rich, you know, they may be controlling all this. But they also, there's a lot of evidence on these people that can put them in jail for other things. And once the people start going after them, they're going to go on the run to begin with. They're going to get arrested. They're going to get tried. Some of them are going to run. The whole thing that they're doing is going to collapse, and it's going to come out into the open. All right? It's going to happen on its own. Once you shine the light on things, and the light takes hold and keeps moving into the dark places and shining, the whole thing is going to be exposed. And I'll tell you what, it's my opinion, and I've heard two different positions on this, but it is my opinion, all of this stuff, all of these sex things that's going on, people with sex abuse in government, and all of this stuff, I think is a priming for what's really going to come out. I think you're going to start to see these pedophile rings coming out, you know, being exposed, and they're going to, people are going to be dropping like flies, and we're going to find a whole bunch of judges and political, this whole system's going to collapse on them. We don't have to, you know, get into the security clearance ourselves or try to figure out how we're going to deal with that. That's going to collapse from within because people are going to be, you know, arrested for other reasons and for other things and what they're using to control this whole thing. Once the people get control of the judicial process in every county across America, who's going to stop those people now? We become unstoppable.
Well,
we will deal with every one of these problems. People will come up with all kinds of ways. These people will run for the hills.
Think about fracking for a minute. Fracking? Remember fracking?
Yep.
Okay. Now, here we have oil companies that are sticking some mystery chemical, some McDonald's secret sauce in there. And what does that secret sauce do? It poisons a ground table, but they don't reveal what it is. And they can get by with it.
Right.
These are the kinds of laws and the secrecy that I'm against. It's like in California where they had five or six ways to oxygenate the gas. They chose the cheapest way that contaminates the ground water table. Then they require everybody to have double containment tanks.
Once we start jailing these people, Fred, and they start running, that whole thing's going to collapse. It's going to be exposed. We're just one group of people, okay? That's all we are. The Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury is one group of people, and we are trying to energize that group of people to work on the grassroots level in every county. And when you got 3,134 county group people in counties and people in those counties going to make sure justice is applied, we're going to reach in every realm of government. It's going to be shut down. There's going to be no place for them to hide.
Well, chemtrails are raining all over the United States at the same time.
Those will be shut down too because there's plenty of evidence to show.
We need to do it right now.
We can't do it right now. Look, we need to educate our children right now. We need to educate the people right now. Do it that quickly. It's going to take time.
Look, I just watched a video today, and it's all about the chemtrails and this whole control system that they're doing. Two videos by very intelligent people, and what they use is all the military's released papers. And all these corporations released papers. They got them on video telling exactly what they're doing. Forget about the classified stuff. They're out there giving seminars and bragging about it. If you say chemtrails, Fred, they'll tell you you're crazy. There's no such thing. But there's geoengineering, and there's sky whitening, and this guy talks about all the different names they give it to try to confuse it. But it's coming out, and we don't even need to go to top secret security. What we need to do is catalog their papers and put the paper in court and bring them to court on what they've released in public is enough to hang them. Believe
and
me.
Let's go back to fracking, too, because look at these corporations.
For years.
Yeah, these corporations, these companies that are fracking, most of them are really run or the profit flows into the elite from this. Nevertheless, no matter what, these corporations know there's a problem. They know that they're making our environment sick. They know that they're injuring the people in the areas that, by destroying their waterways and putting poison into the earth and into their water. Look, they know. They are liable. And they're doing this in this county, that county, or another county. And when the people take back the courts, they're going to go after the companies, the corporations, and they're going to go up the ladder. Look, when I sue, or if I were to sue, or when I sue, anybody. Let's say the IRS. I don't just go after the agents that are assaulting me ultimately. I go after the director. I go after the top guy. He's responsible. Okay, and And so that's what will eventually happen, and it'll happen from 3,133 counties or 34 counties. That's where it's going to happen from. They're not going to be able to hide from the people once the people get the power and the taste of power and control of their own destiny. It's going to happen. Well, and so that's what it's going to take. But before that, there's no way. We can't go after it at this point.
Have you thought about Fukushima and what it's doing to our Pacific coast?
Yeah, that's a mess. I know. I can't even imagine all the problems over there.
I'm telling you, man, don't eat tuna anymore.
Yeah.
It's killing.
You like tuna, huh?
Even the salmon is ruined.
That, too.
It's bad.
You can't believe the changes on the West Coast, on the piers.
That's terrible.
The piers, vertical poles coming out of the water. They used to have all kinds of urchins and starfish clinging to them. Not anymore, pal.
It gets really, really dark. This is the way of history before the light brings back and shines again. And that's where we're at. And you know, you can't put the brakes on that quickly. It takes time to bring things to a halt. I see, personally, when I look at things from my perspective, I see the tide changing. I see the people starting to move.
We got 6 minutes. I want to end with this one thought, okay? And this one, I think, requires a little bit of thought. It's Monsanto. Now, here's an innocent farmer, you know, and he's sitting there, and the next thing you know, he's harvesting, and he's being sued because some seed got onto his property. Well, how about he sues Monsanto for not containing their copyright?
Right, because no lawyer, first of all, will handle the case, and nobody knows how to argue the case to win it because they've got the whole thing fixed. We could win that case. We could argue it, and we can win it. But the thing is we need more people assisting us. If we had people who would do all the legwork to gather together all the evidence from Monsanto and put it together in such a package so that we can then take it and write the papers for the court, we would do it. Because that's a lot of research. And there are people out there that have already done that. So we need people who will go out and find those people and bring them to us. And they need to believe in what we're doing and give us the evidence. And then we would take it into the court. And we could, it goes back to money now. Every case we open up, it costs $400 plus maybe $1,000 in paperwork and filing and serving and all that other stuff. But
John,
here's the thing. We could do something with Agenda 21. We could do something with the chemtrails. We could do something with Monsanto. We could do all of these things, but we need more help. We don't have enough help. Anybody who out there wants to help, get a hold of Jan, go to our directory and give a call to Jan. And let them know that you're willing to help us to work on these things.
At one time, a person owned a piece of property. It was considered that he owned that piece of property as it extended up into the heavens.
Right.
Yeah.
Now today we rent it.
Well, that there's a different opinion on whether you rent it or not, because our Constitution states we can own our property.
Right, but they said they've turned things around, as you know, and we pay taxes on it. And if you pay taxes, you don't own it no more, do you?
Well,
you got a lord somewhere that you're paying your dues to.
It's a tribute. It's a tribute.
In the Supreme Court are nothing but opinion. Well, I'll tell you what. The only way they can enforce their opinion is through the barrel of a gun.
Right.
And when you have a differing opinion, it's who's
on the draw. I think you're talking mostly about the federal courts. And again, there are some bad stuff that comes out of the United States Supreme Court. But all in all, I see mostly good stuff. A lot of great, great stuff has come out of that court. We have American jurisprudence. We have good decisions, even from the United States Supreme Court. And the bad ones will just nullify. As long as the people understand their power and authority through nullification, and that's part of our message, at some point in time, and it doesn't require everyone. It's going to be done by those who participate. who was it? I think it was Jefferson, maybe. I don't recall who it was that said, you know, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority who participate, which is a minimum amount of people. Things are run on 1 or 2% of the people, maybe, unless in this case of the New World Order. But nevertheless, you know, we don't need everyone to do what has to be done. We need the people who can get involved and are involved and become educated, understand their power and authority, and start nullifying. And we can, and we'll put them all in jail when they don't stop their nonsense. We can nullify the decision of the United States Supreme Court. And bear in mind, the decision of the United States Supreme Court only has true power and authority in the courts that are run by judges, which really is contract law, trust law. It has nothing to do on the criminal side of things, okay? And so that's where our concern is, of course. That doesn't affect us on that side of the court, okay? So when people really understand how this process really works, because even the United States Supreme Court says they don't have the power or the authority to overrule a court of record, a court that is decided by a jury. They can't overrule that decision. Whatever it is, they can't overrule it. And that's why you very rarely, when you have a jury trial, you very rarely are able to turn that around.
Unless you can prove that the prosecution told the
jury. Of course, a fraud or something, sure.
And they themselves obstructed justice. They've taken the jury. It's jury tampering. And
that's every case in the last 50 years. Almost.
Yeah.
That prosecutor and judge needs to be in prison.
Exactly.
Well, again, let me just say this again. The United States Supreme Court rules in equity courts. It does not rule in courts of record at all. The power of the people to nullify even the United States Supreme Court rules and overrules, and that's it. And when the people know it, and they know that the people know it, then we're going to have liberty in this nation. Then we're going to have government by consent. But not until they understand that. It is so simple. And the simplicity of what we teach and what we're trying to get across, it is so simple. It's all about jurisdiction and due process. That's what it's all about in every single case. And we will win always, day in and day out, time after time, on that same issue. Jurisdiction and due process.
Hey, Fred.
When we get due process, they can never win. You can't argue against the truth. The lie, the bullshit could never overwhelm the truth. Never. When the people are awake and looking, it can't win. It cannot win.
Yes, Gerard.
I'm looking at a piece of this video, and it's a still. And I just happened to click on it. It was the one about what they're doing with the chemtrails. It's called "Why Is Nobody Talking About This? Dot dot dot. What's happening with billions of people?" 2017 to 2018. But anyway, it's a United States patent number 3,899,144, August 12, 1975. Powder contrail generation, and it gives the names: Donald K. Weir, this guy, that guy, assignee. The United States of America, as represented by the Secretary of the Navy, Washington, D.C., July 22, 1974. They got all these numbers. I can only see the top of the page, but it goes down through, gives all the foreign patents or application, and it says abstract. Light scattering pigment, powder particles, surface treated to minimize interparticle cohesive forces, are dispensed from a jet mill degloglometer as separate single particles to produce a powder contrail having maximum visibility or radiation scattering ability. This is 1975. This is their paperwork. I think you could take this paper into court and sue all of them. They're right here. They're admitting to what they're doing.
Well, before Fred responds, I want to just say that we do have one other person left in the queue that we want to get to before
I think they're all down. Gone.
No, there's one other person left there.
Oh, is there? They must have just got back in.
I'm sorry, gentlemen. It's 9 o'clock. I'm going to not respond. I'll allow the last person.
Okay. Okay. Let me just make this last note here. You know, we have a plan and a focus that gets that. Our plan and our focus is to get a foothold in the court. When we get a foothold in the court, it will. Just get the foothold. Get one case going. Get one prosecution going. Get one indictment under prosecution. That's all it's going to take. and we will create from that one thing almost overnight a landslide across America in our court system through our judicial process. Once we get that now we can deal with any problem. We can deal with every problem you brought up, and that's when we can focus our time on that. Look, we have 9/11. We have brought that to light. We do have research information on that. We're getting ready for potential indictments for that. It may be months before we actually do it. We're telling people from time to time, get out there and read the papers. If you're going to sit on that grand jury to make a vote, yay or nay, for an indictment, you need to read that. We have also the potential indictments for the LaVoy Finnegan assassination. We got all the paperwork. We got video, audio, a lot of stuff out there on our website, up on our docket page. Read that package. Download all the information. Read, watch, listen, and be prepared to come together as a grand jury to make a decision in that case on indictments. And we're going to do some others. Now, we're not going to do indictments on that until we get a foothold in the courts, okay? And we can't do anything with any of these other issues until we get a foothold in the court. But we can do lawsuits, okay? We can do civil suits. If we can get more money, if people will give more money, we can start doing civil suits. And the first civil suit I would go for is these people charging for justice. We go after the judiciary. Who are these people who think they could charge us to go into our own courtrooms? And charge us for justice that we never really get anyway, because they bring us into their own sandbox of statutory world, you know? There's a lot of things we'd love to do, but we need more people working. Give us some of their time for research, bring this stuff together, and we also need more money. We can't do this without money. And look, we're not looking to get money to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars on lawyers and to go. No, we'll do a case for a couple thousand bucks, and we'll run a case right through the gambit. Maybe not even a couple of thousand, maybe a thousand on some of these cases. It's not going to cost us a lot of money. The paperwork is nothing to write for us. We've already written it all, and we just need to apply it and go after them and get defaults. And then people can start using these cases as a leverage and use our words, you know. But we need to get some indictments executed.
Okay. That's the end. End of session.
We have one other person, don't we?
No. They left.
Greta, I think it is.
Oh, Greta. I didn't see that before. You want me to? Okay, I'll open it.
Yeah, that was Fred California from California. Okay. Hit Greta. Final call of the night. Go ahead, Greta.
Yeah, hi, guys. Hey, listen, this has really been a good show you guys put on this evening. I've really enjoyed listening. I just wanted to say I was listening to you talk about needing the money. And when you guys are ready, I am so thankful that my case is civil, and it's over $700,000 to date. And I am more than happy to be very generous towards this cause, because this means everything. And, you know, to me right now, money is just, you know, I've lived without it for so long, it's really not a big deal. But the fact that they have unlawfully asset stripped me 5 times, I'm just saying that if you guys ever do decide to do the indictment that you speak of, or take it to federal court, or however you want to word it, man, I hope somebody considers my case, because there, right there, would be a chunk of money for your cause that I would love to give you guys.
Once we get a foothold in the court, and we start to really, because that's when a lot of people who are not really taking us too serious. We've got a large membership, and we got a lot of people who haven't even become members that follow us and come to our site, read our papers, and read our information, and they're afraid to sign up. But once that tide turns and we get that landslide and the people come in, I assure you, your case and all the people's cases, no matter who they are going to be heard, and they're going to get justice in courts of justice. And if you've got the evidence to beat them, you're going to win it. But and there's going to be a lot of people that have that. You know, I myself, I have, Gerard and I have a few cases going on. We have a case, a personal case, where there's a real considerable amount of money. They defaulted on it. And Lord willing, if we can collect on that, and I think we can, we'll fund this whole thing. It's a no brainer.
Yeah,
we'll be done at that.
I'd love to help. I really would. It'd make my heart warm and fuzzy to help you guys. It really would.
I have another case that's against the government that I'm looking for quite a bit of money, and I know they're going to default. I've already won this case, and they came back out and did some stupid things again. But I let them go the first time. I'm not letting them go the second time.
Good for you. Stick them. That's all I have. That's it. I just wanted to put that in there. And really, I look forward to helping in any way I can.
All right. Appreciate it, Greta. Greta's in
there,
right?
Yes, sir. Yep,
okay.
I gave you my affidavit. You guys got it.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, well, we're going to end the program from there, and next week
right,
hopefully is going to be a – thank you, Greta. Next week is going to be exciting. Next week, hopefully before the call comes on, we're going to release some good news concerning, our project with the power of the sheriff, and we're really expecting people to really get on board with this, and let's get this thing going. Let's hit the ground running on this sheriff project. That project alone can save America, can save us. Look, it'll give us the safety and the protection we need right now by educating our sheriffs to know what a legal warrant is, because everybody knows that most of these warrants are all illegal. Any IRS warrant is illegal. All of these raids are illegal. They're unconstitutional. And once the sheriff understands how he can prevent this and that they are unconstitutional, and that's his authority and his duty to protect the people, once he understands that, and if it's your sheriff and all of our sheriffs, right there is going to give us all the protection we need as we continue to go forward. And then these people will really get frustrated then, because there's nothing they could do to us at that point as we pursue justice in the courts. So this project is just as an important project as the grand jury project, and just as a strong project as our Committee of Safety project. All three of these projects work together ultimately, and all three are important. It's like three legs on the stool. Is that what it is, Gerard, or a tripod or whatever? It's the three legs that carries the seat. And we can move the sheriff real quick, and that could be the catapult for everything else. The sheriffs, once the sheriffs understand not only the power they have, but the empowerment that they can give to the people, we're training these sheriffs to understand that they can go to the people direct. They don't have to go to the prosecutor. They don't have to go to the court and to the judge. All they have to do is walk into the court when the jury's in session and say, I want to talk to the grand jury. Fit me into the next to be heard. And he walks in and brings his case to the people, gets his indictment, and puts the judge files it on the judge or some elected individual or some elitist or whatever. But we can start doing something now with the sheriff, and that would empower the people. And when the sheriff understands that he can just pull 25 people off the street and bring them into the courthouse and get his indictment, they're going to do that. And that's what we're going to need, and we need that. And this will empower us. This will catapult us. This will bring the people to power. Okay, with that, Lord willing, we'll see you all next Monday, and hopefully people are going to get really involved in this sheriff's project. Good night.
Thank you.